All right, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornel West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slang, now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
American,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb instead of have your back, have you beat and lost your mind? Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store signs, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. This phone call cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
you know the black freedom movement, constitutional, moral conscious. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless, but we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the bus, same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America,
we can hear you. Go ahead. Hi. Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. Thank you for being on. We're on the line with Dr. Mary Lee Show Live. And I hope you guys buckle your seatbelts and hunker down because this is going to be an amazing show, part three of last week was part two. And I hope everyone enjoys and ask questions, you know, and I ask God to give us the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and he is going to give it to us with all the hosts. Welcome the host and the co-host and everyone that's on the phone. So without further ado, I will pass the mic over to Dr. Mary Lee.
Thank you so much, Judith. We certainly appreciate you. And we are, as you got through the right, buckle your seatbelts. This is Clutch the World Part 3. We've been straight out of Compton with Mr. Marshawn Kinsey, and this is our third week, and we're going to be bringing it on home tonight. We thank you for joining us. We appreciate you so much. I'd just like to let you know that next week, you absolutely don't want to miss. You do not want to miss. We've been straight out of Compton. Next week, we're going to start straight out of Africa to the world. So we are so ready. We've set the stage for next week. We're straight out of Compton. Clutch the World. Now it's straight out of Africa to all the world. We've been discussing over the previous years, entrepreneurship, economic development. We've been hurt and wounded, and we haven't been able to get over so much pain. But we're still going on. We're still striving. We're still working. We are a people. We will not give up. And so next week as we wrap, after we wrap up this week, bring it on home, next week you want to be here. Again, we thank you. Last week we left off with a lot of questions and just a lot of excitement. Before we bring Mr. Marshawn on, I want to say thank you, Mr. Marshawn, again for being here. He's got programs and projects all over the country, I tell you. And what this young man is working on is definitely bringing about a change in many, 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 many people's lives. We haven't even touched the surface of what Mr. Marshawn is doing. So we're going to, I believe when we left off with Dr. Moncrief, you know, having some more questions. So we want to welcome Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Long, Dr. Cannon, and our additional co-host. We want to welcome Jared, who's been just so faithful and being with us and contributing in all that we're doing. Remember to tap 1 on your phone to speak. We will open up your lines. When you're not speaking, we just ask you to mute your telephones, okay? So we're going to ask Dr. Moncrief to say hello, Dr. Long, and then Dr. Mr. Marshawn, please feel free to ask your questions where you left off at, Dr. Moncrief.
Well, good evening. Thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, for letting me participate on the show once more. I have just been fascinated with the past couple weeks of conversation, opening up new questions in my mind about how to a move forward. I appreciate our special guest, Mr. Marshawn Kinsey. I'm looking forward to hearing what he's bringing to the table tonight. My background is in internal medicine and pediatrics, and I'm trying to be an entrepreneur, and I just appreciate everything that Marshawn has done. So I had questions about the descendants of enslaved Africans, and where are we in terms of reparations. I wanted Marshawn to talk a little bit about what's happening in California and how we can use that information to extend it to other programs and to other entities. I'm very interested, for example, in starting up some black medical schools here in the United States. And so just getting some ideals about that. And then the other questions I have are around recidivism for people who have been incarcerated, who are coming back into the mainstream here. How can we help them assimilate back into society when we know that people who have not been incarcerated of color are having a hard time finding jobs, going to school, trying to live the American dream? So what can we do for those who have been in our legal system and coming out? How can we help them? What kind of programs does Marshawn have to support them? So if you can just start with those two, then I can, you know, pass the mic on to our other colleagues.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me again here. I'm very excited to be here again. On the first question regarding when we talk about the reparations and the redlining and things that have happened on a nationwide basis to African Americans, it's really kind of going back to a lot of times when we were in Tulsa. It was kind of like, you know, when it came to the bombing, you know, the White House was kind of like that kind of Oklahoma's issue, it's kind of Oklahoma's thing. And a lot of times what they're probably going to do is really put it back on the state level and make the state responsible for what happened to the racism that's probably going to happen in that state. One of the things is when you get to that part, it comes down to when you say African Americans in the part in the slave trade and the ones who were descendants of part of that slave trade is recognizing them. And then, of course, when you're doing that part, you have to, of course, recognize the indigenous Americans that were here too as well, you know. And so as that starts to come into place, you start to try to figure out exactly how to kind of line that into play for everyone, in the sense where there's the potential of the funding, but how that necessarily will go, in a sense. And that's kind of where it gets a little tricky. And that's why, you know, we've kind of come in with our concepts and our ideals so we can figure out a way to create a long-term solution for that. Because it's very easy to say, okay, well, here's $100,000. But that still falls into the last question you asked when we go into the prison situation and people come out of prison as well as the jobs is there. The one key we have is we don't own any of the corporate entities to hire them from. So without any of the African-American household big franchises and corporations that exist, you see, the problem that we have is when we start to create our franchises, we do something that's a new unique concept. We come out with a new burger stand or something. What happens when it franchises, everybody else buys that franchise too. And so when they buy that franchise, because it's available for everybody, and, you know, it's really famous now, it's hot. So when everybody buys that franchise, what does it do? They're going to hire who they want to hire for that franchise. And so it's the same thing when our young women get out of college or our young men get out of college. When they graduate with their master's degrees and their engineering degrees, who's going to hire them? If they get denied for the engineering degree, there's no black African-American company that says, oh, we hire, here you go, come to me. Here, come to our car company. Come to our appliance company. We don't have that. That's a household name where we can send that out to. So no matter how many we get out of prison, we have to create that economic stronghold where we bring them in into a compass, where we have them into our into working with our small business and entrepreneurship, because we don't have enough corporations at that level that we can hire. One corporation could easily sustain a prison industry if we had a large corporation that was a soft drink corporation that needed to have certain right there, certain locations and certain parts. And as soon as somebody got it there, they could go work for this drink company. They can get their skills, and then we can go to school with that, and then they can learn different training. But we don't have that in place, and so that's one of the strong elements that's making it, that makes it kind of hard for us to kind of get to that level where we want to help our people. And because we have the solutions, it's just that when we, in a sense, start to build those solutions, we get bought out. And then people always say, well, you know, if we sell, there's nothing wrong with selling. But what people don't ever ask their question is, what happens when they don't sell? Yeah, we sell a lot of our businesses, and yes, this goes, but what happens when we don't sell? And I think that's the question that needs to happen, because I see a lot of businesses, black businesses, that sell. Oh, that's awesome. Wow, they sell for people. Wow. What happens to the big corporations that said no? You see? And so until we get those in place, we can't get those dudes out of jail to come be our, to work on our camera crew for us while we're filming this shoot. Or we can't have them come and security for our big festival that we're doing, for this big, huge, large festival. Because we haven't put ourselves in position like that. We don't own enough coliseums. We can say a coliseum, here, man, you can work at the coliseum. You know what I'm saying? This will be here. We got you for a year. And after this, a year of being here, we'll get you stuff so you can understand different account or management and see what kind of skill we could get you in. We need to have those things in place so that way when they get out of there, we have something sufficient that we can hold them on to. And that way we can, that's why it's clutch on to them, hold on to them out of prison and follow them through to the successful pathway that we need to have for them. Whether it's being a captain on a boat. If you want to captain the boat, just drive the boat and take them out to this part right here and just let them fish 4 hours and bring it right back. A lot of money being made like that. A lot of money. And so those are easy things that we can train them into as we start to move them out. So that's where we're trying to position them to. Projects like that where they can create their own ownership without having the overhead, because that's the problem. When they get the overhead, we get mistreated. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you've been this, you better keep this job or this. We got to get out of this situation where we put our people that we're training, getting them out there, we send them over there, and then they get kind of belittled or mistreated because of their background. You know you can't go anywhere else, so you better do what I say. I don't want to put our people in that situation anymore. There's no need for us to put our people in that situation. We need to create the pathway all the way through for him. We did it since we've been here. We've been fighting, but it's like, you know, people act like it seems like we haven't done it before. Madam CJ Walker, what happened to her company, her organization? It's not like we haven't been successful corporations or business, but what happens to them? You know, why do they, you know, what, there's something that happens to them, and everybody else seems to just flutter, just keep growing and growing and growing. And ours just always seem to flounder. There's always something with our companies. And so we need to be able to do it on a bigger scale and a stronger level where we can maintain those people who are coming out of jail. The same way with our youth, the same way going into college. The big major problem is having the hole for them. If we can't, we can talk about housing all we want to, but if we don't control the housing market, or we don't have the owner places where our people rent from us at, then of course we're going to be getting mistreated in the housing market. But what happens when we had the housing market in 2008? We lost 50% of our money, the whole black community. So it's like, you know, it's not that we fail, it's just that it's something that happens in Washington, things that happen, and just, money just disappears. It's the corporations that said no, they want to keep going forward, they don't want to sell. They just seem to, you know, their lights just seem to go out for some reason, or somebody came and checked their place and said, you know what, I like this facility, but that light fixture and that right there wasn't fixed right. You got to fix that. You got to shut everything down. This is what happens. This is what happens when we say no. So either we get a company, we make it really successful and gets really big, and then we have to sell it. Because if we don't sell it, they will get it. They will get it. So I think we have to really address the problem of, can we have a corporation in America that is a household name that is 100% black? I think that is the major factor. Where is it at? Because, you see, as we start a corporation up, there's things that you do. You can have the greatest idea in the world, but what do you need to do? You need to put the corporation so the people can see it. So where do you go? You go to the social media, you want to put it up, they own that. Oh, okay, I should put it on the networks, they own that. So if nobody, if they say no, how do you get your corporation to the people? I want my commercial on the Super Bowl. I'm going to reach 3 million people. No, we're not putting your commercial on the Super Bowl. What do we do? Word of mouth. Did you see that word of mouth? Come on. Why should we have to do that? After being hung on millions of trees, after being tall and feathered, after our young women not even knowing what a virginity was until the 1950s, 1960s, because they was taking, it was no virgins in the 1700s. Took our language away. People get mad. They get mad out here. Don't speak you speak in your language. Go back. Do you know we got murdered for speaking our language? We were killed for doing that. Really? Really? Wow. Wow. And they talk about what racism is. We're racist. We couldn't read. We were killed for reading. And somebody tell you, go back to your country, or you're being racist to me. Are you serious? And see, we created this equal playing field where everybody is on the same page with us, and it's not. Like I keep saying, there are a lot of veterans out there, but there are a lot of veterans that have purple hearts. Just like there are a lot of American citizens out there, but there are American citizens that look like me, that black, that got that purple hearts too for what we did. We don't know what it's like to seek and come to America for the dream. And I think everybody see America for that dream. Like, oh, that's America the dream. They forget we came here under a whole different circumstance. We built this American dream that everybody sees. And we're the only ones who can benefit from it. And then there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with us saying we want an all-black hospital. Oh, no, that's wow. But we can't go into these hospitals and be treated fairly. We get an all-black hospital, all-black doctors, all-black nurses, so that we can have our people in training. Don't forget who invented the open-heart surgery. Take our accolades from us and act like we ain't those people. And put us just in one category. Okay, you can run and do that part, yeah, but, you know, over here, you know, y'all ain't know. Go back through our black history and see what we're really known for. But they hide it from us. And we can't tell it to each other because, you know, the platforms is not there. So as long as we don't have them on their own platform where they can control the avenue, we don't have their own news network so that they can't broadcast when their women go missing. No, we can't let them do that because they can reach and talk to their own people, and black people are too influenceable out here. There are people who use the word nigga that are not black. Lots of them. Lots of them. And use it even with black people not around. Normally, that's a lot of influence. A lot of influence. And with that kind of influence, you just can't just open the door for that person to have 100% opportunity to reach wherever you want to reach. You can't. Nobody got that powerful influence. Like I try to tell people, I don't know, I'm still here. Just make sure they didn't cut me out again.
Are you still here?
Hello? Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're still here.
It's I don't know if you remember back in the days, there was something called Apple Pop-Tarts. Apple Pop-Tarts, and they were frosted. And they used to sell these Apple Frosted Pop-Tarts in the stores. You would buy them all over. You would see them. In fact, they were the number one sellers of Pop-Tarts. People don't even know what they are. Probably don't even know they ever existed. But they were Apple Frosted Pop-Tarts. And they were on the shelf. And no matter when you went to the shelf, either you would see a gang of cherry, gang of strawberry, gang of all this marshmallow stuff. But you would always be like, hey, you know, apple strawberries. And you would just keep walking away. And you couldn't wait to get the apple ones. That's black people, because you know what happened is they took the apple frosting off the shelf because you know what? Nobody was buying the strawberry. Nobody buying the cherry. Nobody want to buy the marshmallow one. So what we're going to do is we got to take the apple Pop-Tarts off the shelf, and now everybody's open to everything else. And that's the whole key element. Just keep them off the shelf. That's why it's so hard for us to fight. But when we fight, oh, we be so happy. Oh, we're in Walmart. We're in Kmart. We're in this store. Why are we not in our Negro store? We've been here 400 years. Where's ours? Where's our Kmart? Where's ours? If we had our own Kmart company that was franchised out, we wouldn't need to be worried about where those people come out of prison and be employed. They're working straight at these franchise companies we got. We hired our prisoners out of here because all our prisoners ain't did nothing wrong. Like I keep saying, y'all forget about the woman, Annie Duquesne, who sabotaged over 60,000 DNA tests to get black men locked in jail. This is a fact. And she only got 3 years probation. She falsified over 60,000 men's lives were changed, lost their families, and they couldn't raise their kids off of her lies.
and they gave her 6 years probation for that. And so you mean tell me, that was just in one city. So imagine if you had a gang of Annies every city, just falsifying DNA and just locking dudes up. And then we say black people are the most violent, they're the most locked up. Well, why we don't take any Duquesne numbers and say, well, you know, man, if you look at that, if they have one of her, it's city shit. With all due respect, it seems possible that all those black people in jail, that's 50,000, that's a lot of people. And you give her a pat on the back? But we don't say anything like that. We always take our punishment, we take our hits, and we keep pressing forward. We keep pressing forward. It's like if it goes into a draw, the thing is we got a Black Farmers Association. So with this, all the prices of food going up, if the Black Farmers Association said, I got this black people, let's go. So if the Black Farmers Association said, we're going to send food directly to the black people to make sure that we good during this recession, everything is going, they're going to have a problem with it. People who built this country, hung on trees by the millions, they still will have a problem with us becoming self-sufficient. No, I can't do that. So we're going to hinder the Black Farmers Association. We're going to stop all this because we're going to hinder this because we just, you know, we want you to be under our order. After we didn't fight for our own rights and freedom. The thing is, they keep thinking we everybody else and coming to America for this dream that they have. We're not them. We're not the ones that get the dream. We're the ones that were beaten and whipped and murdered and killed to give you the dream that you have. Have you forgotten the situation? How this works? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Yeah, what I wanted to interject here, I wanted to Dr. Moncrief. So on these issues, now Clutch the World is dedicated to organizing, you know, creative initiatives that deal with all these things that deal with poverty, the homelessness, veteran issues, racism, immigration, and economics. You work it through legislative proposals, media campaigns and many types of events. Now, you know, you were sharing with me and also a little research. You have Clutch the World, and your organization is directly involved with Monster Solutions right now. So Dr. Moncrief, you know, in answer to your question, also, I would like for you, Marshawn, to explain, you know, the funding and some of the direct program solutions that are already created, and how you're operating those projects, those programs. You know, how, you know, you're training people, you're training students and adults to do exactly what you're speaking of right now, to own our own. And if you could just touch upon the funding, too, that is now accessible.
Yes, if you go to the NCRC, the Non-Reversible Coalition, I'm gonna load it up real quick. But if you go there, what happened was that there was a lot of redlining essentially that happened to a lot of the African Americans, which basically means the redlining, they were giving, you know, they were charging us way 100 times, you know, the price of for interest and things of that nature. They were charging Europeans for housing and stuff. So in a sense, it was the same thing that always cheats us. We always get raped and robbed and cheated out of our history and our culture when it's time for us to prevail. So in a time when everybody was buying property, you know, to keep us from buying property, because, you know, once they had Tulsa, Oklahoma was destroyed, they never wanted us to buy any more property or really come up and build a city like that no more. So what they did was they just started redlining, you know what I'm saying, and just started just really giving a whole bunch of prices. And so the NCRC went, they sued them for that. They went to court, and there were two organizations that were part of that, that was a part of that, partnering with the NCRC to ensure that we were able to get recompensated back for that general, you know what I'm saying, rape of our people, you know what I mean? And so they honored that.
And so what we're doing now is with that honor in there, a couple of these organizations have come together, seen the work that we were doing at Clutch the work that I've been putting in for a lot of years, and they said, look, let's come together. We have 50 states here. There's a lot of states that we need to make sure are that were part of this red line in there, and we're going to go ahead and let's make sure you can handle California for us. So I'm going to be able to do the 44 districts under the Friends of the African Union, the Smart Whites, the California Smart Whites Reimbursement Coalition, partnering there. My CEO of that organization who really empowered me, and this is a good thing for a lot of the elders, because a lot of times the way I am, I'm not really a compromising person. I don't, you know what I'm saying, I know what I need for my people, and for them to say, you know, hey, Michonne, man, we're going to let you have that, and you can do what you need to do, because we feel very comfortable on the decision that you would make. So Herschel Daniels did give me the authority and power to go ahead and ensure that I can make sure that as we persist to move forward, at least in California, that I can ensure that this is going to be done right, and that we are left in the same position we would have been left with if they had not redlined us. So what we're doing is we're setting up a position in a sense, because I want to make sure we have long-term funding, long-term goals, and long-term accessibility. So one of the major things that I want to put together is setting up an opportunity for us to engage in what we call, you know, into the diaspora and being able to create that. You know, with $1.5 billion within the diaspora, including us, that is set for us to be able to go to places like Haiti, places like Brazil, places, you know, as well as in Africa. And so, you know, my vision in a sense is for us to start to create these entrepreneurship, these businesses, like the company that the young woman had earlier today that she spoke about, a company like that, and be the school that she wanted to start, taking that pharmacy school and the school from that and utilizing that in the diaspora. So now, not just here in the States, but going to Haiti because they need it there. We need those schools in Africa. We need those schools in the parts of Brazil. You know, a lot of places where the darker hue people live are treated really less. And that's what we consider diaspora. So we're going to go grab them and make them a part of us, make them understand that we understand what you've been through because we've been through it here, and see how we can utilize our skills to help build them up. Because like I said, we built America. You know what I'm saying? At some time, and it's a first world country now. We can build first world countries. We can build our own first world country. We don't have to come to another first world country and in a sense and try to help it continue to grow. But it don't even want us. So our objective now is to see how we can take our creativity and our skills into the diaspora. So being able to create the training and the school and all these young black women who have these degrees and so many different things are now being able to use that into the diaspora. As we start to go to these other countries, we start to increase the wealth there, start to increase the money there, so that way, yes, now they can afford the cost of getting a haircut, but we need to train our barbers so that when we send our barbershops, we got barbers now going into Africa, going into the diaspora. We've got beauty salons. We've got nail salons. We got these things that are set in place. And so with this part in there, we already have these connections set with Africa. We have land and partnerships in Africa that are saying coming. So when we partner, we're saying, look, when we go there, we want to have a tour. I know people, I ain't moving back to Africa. Look, we just want a tourist house with a business. You got to have your business house out there. So when you go there, you got a house you stay at, and you got a business that you find somebody to run for you. So whatever it is you sell, there's a lot of great things that we create out here, clothing and shoes and things that we make that we can sell within a diaspora at a great cost, you know, for us to be able to benefit from, and now creating a whole new way, because we have to understand a lot of people don't support our businesses here. It's nothing personal, but it's like, you know, you don't really see a lot of black businesses out there that you can really go to. A lot of our soul food restaurants are not even owned by us. You know what I'm saying? It's like we have to compete with other people just to own our own stuff. And it's weird. Nobody else has to compete with that. You know, and so that's one of the strategies, and where we're trying to consistently get everything all in place. So if I can answer some of the understanding of what we're doing. I'm still here. I just want to make sure it didn't cut me off.
You're still here. You're still here.
Okay.
Thank you. Dr. Moncrief.
Yes. I was listening to the response to my question, and again, this opens up more questions for me. For example, I was talking about reparations and getting black medical schools, and I should have said black hospitals in there with it. But my mind is also now extended to why can't we have schools for people who are returning from the penal system, back schools like colleges where they go to, and specifically we can start off with a trade school component of it, a trade school where they can learn skills that they can they can use to gain employment. It would be like a college type situation where there would be dorms for them to stay in as they transition if they didn't have homes that they could go to. My mind is trying to wrap around how we can have an impact, not just, you know.
Well, let me help you a little bit.
On this whole group of people, it's one fourth of our black males are involved in this system, and that's one fourth of them are losing their futures over nothing. You know, some of them, yeah, but most of them are losing their futures over nothing, and we need to be able to give them back their futures. You know, I'm talking about here, the descendants of enslaved Africans here. I realize there's a whole world out there, and people of color, blacks in particular, are being discriminated against throughout the planet. But focusing on here, you know, programs here that we can put in place, money here that we are owed, that they are owed. You know, coming up with plans that include them and not plans that we make that exclude them. That's what I'm talking about. You know,
I think what we're looking at is we're persistently always focused on trying to train and trying to develop this. So somebody that been in jail, like, I'm out here with them. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm listening and I'm seeing what they want. And you know what I'm saying? And if we see that we've been trying to do that for years and it hasn't worked, you know what I'm saying, with all due respect, you know what I'm saying, when we try to get them into the training programs, it's because we haven't set the atmosphere right for them to be able to train it. That's why we've opened up pigeons flapping with the pigeons now, so we can do the pigeons, open up the canine training, the trade canine for sniffing, for saving people in the snow, for just being with kids with cancer, training. So we got to get them into the low riding and making this a professional sport and get into the things that they like. So the stuff that we're catering to in our training program, because I wasn't breaking it down, you know, we can't tell everything we're doing, but in a sense, we're breaking down a little bit things more strategic in a sense that they're more capable of really wanting to enjoy and they still can make the same amount of money in. So there's no reason why we shouldn't have our own ass car. There's no reason why we shouldn't have one with us in there. And now when they come out, we got something that they like to do, something that's part of the culture, and they don't feel like they're going into a whole 9-to-5 or what's the name part of setup, because that was the whole part of them sometimes starting. Like, man, I started selling drugs because I didn't want to work for nobody. And then it's like they go to jail for selling drugs, get out of drugs, and then we think they're going to go work for somebody. Like, you know what I'm saying? So the thing is, we want to try to get them out to understand, come work for yourself. What is it that you want to do? What's your creation that you're trying to do, and how can we help you? You know what I'm saying? You write a book, you're an author, or you write a book, well, here's somebody that helps write books. Here's Mr. Cannon. He's an author in a book. Here's the class we said, 50 of the dudes that come out of jail that want to write a book about their story. You know how many of them want to write books? I just want to write a book, man. I don't want to be trash. I just want to write a book. Well, here's the book. Now we start a list of, here's these prison books that are coming out from all these young men who are kind of prison bestsellers. $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, bam, bam, bam. That's 15 million out of his books. So the thing is triggering, letting them figure in the asset of which they feel vulnerable into going into, and not kind of saying, oh, we're going to put you into a school. Now, with this being done, when we're training them in there to do these skills, we want to make sure that they have a job when that happens. So when it goes to a place, we say, okay, maybe they don't have a captain. They get a captain license. They can't get nobody out here to hire them. They can get hired somewhere in the diaspora. They can get hired somewhere over there. So somebody fixing on a car and trained to fix cars right now is really useful in another country.
someone who knows how to install auto replace and do this and make the lifts on the car, it's really high driving on the car, it's really, really useful in another country right now. They can make a lot of money in Africa to put in hydraulics on cars. We haven't brought that out there yet. We haven't took that to a lot of part of diaspora. So we have to create these kind of initiatives that are more culturally sound, where they feel like, okay, I'm all in, you know, instead of just coming into the book part. Mm-hmm. So we're targeting and triggering things a different way. It's nothing, you know, it's just the way that we have to kind of
it's like a hands-on, on-the-job training type of training for, you know, every industry. It's not really eliminating an industry. The problem that we have as a people is that, you know, Dr. Marquise and all, the problem that we have as a people is that we are not in control of industry. We're not in control. I mean, like, we're not in control of businesses. So when with reentry or with anything, even people who don't have a record or people who have limited experience, you know, when we go to a company and apply for a job, we're going to them, I mean, it's at their discretion to hire us or not hire us. They hire people with background all the time. But they'll use that. That's a form of redlining. They'll use that to not hire our people. Because I've been right there. You know, I've seen this here happen. And just like with our own company, you know, we have a security business, and we train people at different levels. Now, there are certain jobs that someone maybe with a record cannot do. But see, there's still a scale. Like, for instance, if someone is fresh out, it depends on the offense. It depends on how old it is. And it depends on really race, really. So people can hire you to do a, like, I'll just use our security services. We can hire people to do certain jobs based on 1 to 3 year, you know, certain types of felonies. Then from 3 to 6 years, certain types of felonies. And then some from 1 to 8 years, certain types of felonies. Now, but what do they do? What do they do? Like, we will hire them, and then sometimes we'll even bring them in as a trainee, you know, in other types of ways. And some things we're not going to say here, you know, on this show. But we be creative in how we provide reentry. That is no more than what they do. They do the same thing. But when we don't have enough of our own businesses set up, then we can't. Then our people are rejected. So it's same thing like with the hospital. So we're working on actively right now bringing together certain plans to open hospitals, new hospital medical centers, new medical schools, and we want, you know, those to be our own. So as we're looking at and creating ways in order to be able to do that and do it with our people who are already in the field of medicine, who's already there, to do it with schools that are already, you know, have medical hospitals. And so how do we do that? How do we involve, who says that a felon cannot be a medical doctor? Who says that? So we start them, we can do the approach that Clutch the World has created through that approach. There's funding out there that can provide certain types of services and training in the medical field, just like step by step, a little bit at a time. so where they can go into their field of interest and get that support in order for them to be able to go there. But it has to be a black-owned facility, okay? It has to be a black-owned and operated program. This is what Mr. Marchand is saying here, is that if you can think of it, there's a plan in place and likely already operating throughout the diaspora and here in the U.S., you know, projects that are benefiting from, you know, funds that have or types of funds that have been made available into the billions of dollars, you know, through the NCRC, you know, legislation, you know, so which is available now, you know, for us. But it's a matter of creating the vehicle or the program for that to bring them in and do it. So the only way, there's only one way. There's only one way. And it's that we embrace our people where they are, right? You have to embrace them where they are and then set up this programming along with people like Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Long, Dr. James Cannon, Marshawn. But what we want to get over to you out here is that already working. And so the people who come into the businesses and be trained, they can stay with the trainers and work, you know, as their employee. They can go and start their own. And then the part with Haiti coming in is that these trainees, and then once they're going, can take that same profession, those same skills, you know, that same training to Haiti, you know, to help pull, you know, build Haiti back up. And so
what I'm trying to understand and what I'm trying to visualize is a system that, for example, I don't know the number of descendants of enslaved Africans who are released each day from the penal system back into society, okay? But mm-hmm. I do know that providing 1, 2, 10, 20 jobs is not going to be enough to come to meet that need, and I do mm-hmm. know that we have to become responsible for our own people and stop waiting for somebody else to come in and come up with solutions. And so when mm-hmm. I talk about, you know, creating a school, okay, to teach, and it may be an old concept, and hopefully I'm not doing a Booker T. Washington thing, okay, but when I talk about creating schools that will actually teach trades that people can use, I'm not talking about mm-hmm. one or two people getting a job and going over to or another country to fix automobiles. We got plenty of automobiles here that need fixing, so we can train our people to own their own automobile businesses here. But they have to be trained, you know. And so when I talk about a school, a college, a university, just for our people who are coming back into transitioning back into society. Let, you know, whatever classes or whatever thing that they want to learn, let us teach it. But not just for one or two people. I'm talking about having these institutions in different places across the country that train hundreds of people, thousands of mm-hmm. people, okay? And realizing that a lot of people who are incarcerating shouldn't be, But everybody who comes out needs to be able to do something, needs to be able to do something to make a living.
I understand exactly what you're saying. I think we're missing in the middle. We're both on the same page, but I think what you're forgetting is the aftermath. If you train them right now and they're trained right now, and we say, here you go, here's your certificate, guess who they're going to? They're going to everybody else right now because we don't have what you need, what you're asking for on the back end so that they can have this. We don't have that part ready for them yet. So that's why I'm saying we need to build that foundation first. So that way when they go to school and they come out from graduating and they get a certificate, we are ready for them. It's our fault. We should have our stuff together. So as soon as they get a certificate, we hire right here to our auto body shop or hire right here for our AV company. Now we have Mams Auto, a black-owned, all-black-owned automobile company we found that we're going to be working with, and this Mims Auto. They actually sell cars, but you would be surprised that it was an automobile company that existed that's all-black-owned in America, America-owned, and we don't know nothing about it. And they actually got cars that they're selling right now on the online and everything, manufacturing facilities and everything, Mims Automobile. You know what I mean? And so you look at that and you're like, how did we not know about this? How do we not know about this? You know what I'm saying? This is a whole automobile company. So when we so now that we get these relationships and we're finding these relationships, we say, okay, we know you need to build more manufacturing plants. So when we get now that we have this corporation, we say, when we get you out, look, can you work with us on the manufacturing plants right now? Because right now we need to build this up and get as much of these up so that way we can get enough of these plants up so that now when we build all these colleges up, because we train 1,000 kids, we need 1,000 businesses for them. That's the problem. We keep overtraining. We can't go the same way America goes, where they train, 100,000 people a year and only in the job description only have 60,000 a year of job things, but they change a million, you know what I'm saying, in college. So we don't want to go into the diaspora with that same mindset. That's why the diaspora is so important, because with that, when we start to build, we're building a new foundation that can't be Tulsa, Oklahoma, that can't be bombed, that can't be destroyed, you know what I'm saying, that we don't have to worry about them coming to try to violate or things of that nature. You know, that's one thing we've had. We don't want to run into the same thing like the Moulin Rouge. You know what I mean? This is just a story of every time we build something, it becomes successful. If they can't have it, it gets destroyed. And it's nothing personal with me, but it's just what they have done. So it's like we must move on those actions. We got to move like, man, I know we ain't going to do it this time. I know you ain't going to do it this time, but, you know, man, I feel better if we can build that here, build that here, build that here. Because, see, every skill that we train these people here for, our people, our men, young men and women here for, they can take these kids, these skills, and they're going to train them in the diaspora. And now these things are set. And so now we're creating another business pathway, because now when they go there with the dealership that's in America, now they go there, they build up this party in Haiti. Now guess what? The dealership's coming to Haiti. Oh, man. Now we go to Africa. Guess what? We got the dealership partnering with their Nigerian truck company they have out there. That's partnering there. Now we got dealerships here. So we train our kids here saying, look, yes, we're going to train you in owning a dealership, but we understand that we might not get the support that we want for a black-owned automobile shop here in America. That's fine. We have the diaspora that we can brand. We brand all their companies here. Remember when Kia first came out, they had the little rats with the hoodies on, with the glasses, dancing. Then they went and got all the basketball players and started jumping all over the rims and stuff, over the Kia. So they do the same thing. They do the same thing. We sell everybody else's stuff. Every time we talk about a jewelry club, it's always Jake the Jeweler or what's name the jeweler. You ain't never heard Tyrone the Jeweler yet. I haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. But it's time for us to put our Tyrones and jewelers on. You know what I'm saying? Let them start getting their place in place. So we talk to them constantly about minerals, bro. We're going to go out there. We're going to send 100 y'all go out there and find some minerals, find the coolest, nicest mineral. We're going to get out there and get that in place. So that now they're saying, okay, now we're creating a relationship. We're getting these minerals. We're getting these special things. We make them look good. We're getting these things. And we out here selling these out here. So we create these type of relationships now that are global in a sense, so that when we do this 1,000 train that you want to do, if we don't have a place, we don't have a place for them right now in the States, but we got the trainers right now in the diaspora. And that's why I'm saying, if we don't want to wait, I agree with you. But I'm saying when we train them and give them these skills, there's no reason why they can't go and make that money in the diaspora building up our corporations here. When you got your company, build your company when you got 1.5, because now you can build it in over there in Brazil. You got a spot in Haiti. You got a place here. Yes, you have some in America, but if things get ugly, you know what happens.
They always come after us. They start shooting and killing us when things get bad. When things happen, they come to the church and start killing us. They kill us when they get mad at the immigration problem. They kill us. You see what I'm saying?
So
you got to understand, as soon as things don't get right, they come around for us.
This is exactly what they did. This is exactly what the Europeans did. They hear everything that was developed here, they developed in another part of the world. And so they have, so that they're doing trade, and they have somewhere to send everybody to and block us out. And so when we have, and I think we're all on the same page, we have our mm-hmm. own businesses. We have our own places for them to go. We have our own schools. We have our own medical centers, and we have to start training them early. You know, we have to start training them, training young, and particularly when we talk about reentry, and we talk about, you know, we talk about the mentally challenged. You know, there are certain things that the young people today, we cannot get them to do. You know, there are things that they want to do. And so I don't think we have much of a choice than to meet them exactly where they are. We want to go to, we have a caller, and so with hands up, we're going to come back, you guys, okay? 443, your last 4 digits are 0775. You have a question or comment?
I have a comment, and I'm really happy that this conversation is going on, and I hear both positions, and I think that both people are right, and the young man is telling the truth. We don't have a choice. Unfortunately, where we are in history, we don't have a choice to choose between one or the other. We need both, is my opinion. And the value and the necessity for the school, in my opinion, is the same thing that college was developed for in the first place, which is like a bridge from teenagehood to going into the real world. So I hear it as a bridge from coming out of a penal institution to providing a decompression chamber and a place where people like this young man's concept, that's what you would be bringing in to the business curriculum, and everybody in there would be exposed to that. But you would also be doing the psychological services that they need to train themselves so that they can survive in today's world, because incarceration has done such a number on them. Let's look at their children who have been bumped into the system of, where they don't have a home and they have to go into foster care. They are screwed up. They're messed up. So then you would have a way to even, like there are people here now who are taking foster kids and setting up small houses where they can train them just to try to function. So as far as I'm concerned, you need both, but you're going to hopefully through these discussions, you'll come through some way where you will work together. And they may need a place that would be like a boarding school, because that would be, in my mind, a specific black-run place that would allow them to be exposed to all of these things.
I love the idea. I think it'd be a perfect outlet that it'd be sent in, and that we will be able to send them into. You know, the thing is that, you know, when you set that up in there, some of them coming out of an 8-foot cell might not want to go back into that kind of situation, in a sense, when it's like a boarding school type of situation. But in a sense, I think as long as we can offer, because our goal was kind of more of a outdoors, getting them outside. That's why we wanted to do the rolling pigeons and bring that back and bring back those champions and bring it back to things that kind of is more relaxing, because some of us spent 15 years, man, in jail, 20 years, you know, a lot of them, I understand, it's like, man, I'm tired, man. You understand, like, I'm just, you know, I know you want me to go to school. I know you
want
to take this book,
man. Well, all I'm saying is that I really hope and pray that you both get to work together, because the black place talking about that will be boarding wouldn't look like the other one. It would allow you to come in and do that. And it may be necessary only because they have no place to live. You have to deal with that reality.
And you know, unfortunately, we're going to get Dr. We're going to get Dr. Long's on here, but you know, and unfortunately, you find reentry, and I've actually established reentry and work with them, and you have these various different levels of transitioning, but they still don't want it. I think the main reason is because they're white run and operated. You know, we have very, very limited black operated, you know, reentry. In fact, you know, I can think maybe one or two in the country. And so this here is also a turnout. There are boarding foster care schools and foster care in this country that house majority white children. That's another thing that we're losing out on. And I'm talking about beautiful campuses. I mean, beautiful campuses. When they get in with drugs and do reentry, they have rehabilitation centers that, you know, look like resorts. We don't have anything like that. They won't even offer that to us. And then they have it where, I mean, they don't have to be rich to go there. They just have to accept you. You know, I mean, many of them are scholarships and free because the government is paying for it. But they don't give it to us. They give us that freaking option, you know. And it really perturbs me to no end because I've seen this over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, we are left out. We have to do this. We have no choice. We have to build our own medical schools with our own boards, our own hospitals.
Yes.
We have to build everything with our own. We must.
And it's not racist.
It's not racist.
Because they're going to say it's racist. Like, well, y'all doing reverse racism because, you know, it's this, and there's nothing personal about that. It's because we got a lot of health issues and things that we need to build within ourselves that we're going to work on ourselves. It's our country just like everybody has their own. So we can do it because that's a lot of one of the elements we go to is because, you know, well, what about people of color and all people of color and this, and we always run into that issue when we want to do our own. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like, you know, we don't get mad when Martin Luther King was taken. We don't get mad at that. But I'm saying it's an issue when, you know, I had someone go take his daughter, broke an arm. He like, man, I got to wait behind like 500 people just to get my daughter seen. And you know what I'm saying? My people been hung on all these trees. We should be able to walk into a hospital and be seen by our people, by our doctors. You say we this and you say, oh, we retarded and we this. But just give us our own doctors and this. Because our doctors, I think, are some of the amazing. I think that with these hospitals we opening up are going to really be able to change the element stuff that we need as well as our schools, because like I said, we can't, our kids are going to school and the kids are running around saying nigga, all the kids, Latino kids, Asian kids, the white kids, they all running around just saying nigga, because it's the hottest word out right now. And so they're like, man, I feel like how they fell on the ancestors did, like, you know, you just run around like I thought it was cool at first, but now it's just like, man, even when you arguing with them, they're still arguing using the word, even though you mad. Like, if you still using the word, we mad. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you arguing, saying nigga, and it's like, wow, you know? And it's like you can't fight because it's this and it's this. So it's just, you know, the situation we in and our kids are in, and we don't want to put them in that situation. So we need to just carry out. We're going to our own schools. It's nothing personal. I already have a Black History book right now that I'm looking at right now. That was done by Dr. Walter Milton Jr. and Joe L. Friedman. And I just got this book in today, signed, and I mean, I'm just going through this book, and I mean, it's one of the amazing, Black History 365, and I mean, I just left a message on the line, because I just told him, man, that this was just, I mean, just seeing the things and how we can do this, and as we start to open up our school, what we're going to be able to teach our young man, and then again, when we have these, the guys coming out of the prison, you know, when we come in there, we start to get our coaches and the different things that we need to get things set in place, so it's something that we have to do, and that's why, I mean, going into the diaspora is kind of a outlet for us, because we've seen, like I said, so many times it's been destruction, that we want to make sure that we actually have a hospital here. We can now go open a hospital here. So now that our doctors and nurses that we train here in the States,
can now go overseas and now they have a job. Even if they're working for three months, a month and come back, 2 weeks and come back and getting the payments going here because we have our specialists that can go now here to Brazil, that can go here to Puerto Rico, that can go here to Haiti, that can go to these places in Africa. It's a lot of different things that Africa needs, especially the youth and the kids need as far as nutrition and things like that. And we have so many amazing nutritionists here in the States right now, amazing nutritionists that we can send to Africa to help with the nutrition, see what they need, work with our farmers out here, our Black Farmers Association, the African farmers, bring that in together with our things and set that up right there. So now they, our nutritionists have an outlet. They can go to Haiti and help the nutritionists there. So we have the job descriptions already. A lot of these things we already have. We don't own the businesses to hire them. So they're running around going to everybody else and everybody's saying, no. Well, we're going to say yes. We just got to open up the door. The wages open up. The diaspora is there. The connections, we've made the connection with Africa. We've got the UN. You can go to the New Future Foundation and go to Queen Mother Blakely, and you will see her great work with the United Nations. So we are progressing forward to do whatever we need to do to make sure it gets done. So it's not about getting it done. Essentially, it's all about just getting them out the way. That's the problem. It's excuses me. And that's the problem. It's hard for Black people to do, to just say excuse me, because people don't like to see us come up. When we come up, everybody else feel like it's their come up too. Because they're so used to making money off us. If you gave us $100,000, everybody else is going to raise the price on everything. You gave dudes, Black people, $100,000 in nail shops. Everything right now will go up, but Black people just got $100,000. I'm not going to sell the same thing I sold to him yesterday for $2. I'm going to sell it for $4 now because he got money. That's just the nature of things because we don't control no elements. We don't control anything. So because we don't have that, we can be taken advantage of. And when we take that from them, what are we supposed to do? They're going to be mad about that. You can't get rid of our liquor stores. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's just like the Doctors Without Borders. And they're out there. There are many. And now, you know, with the internet, I mean, we can still be here and provide services, you know, any part of the diaspora. And it's legal. It's legitimate. And so the whole thing is that we must, you know, do these businesses. And there is money out there. Now, you know, after George Floyd and then also with this NCRC, you know, that is available now. And then there's many more funding. And so but we do need to be collaborative. We have to be collaborative in order to access it and make the most out of it and provide these services. But I think we do have to meet people where they are. I'm going to find out Dr. Montree. Come back to you, and then we want to go to Dr. Long. Dr. Montree.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I was waiting for Dr. Long. There's a lot of feedback here. Somebody's not muted, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there is some noise, and I don't know where and who it is. So we just ask everyone to mute your phones because there is some background noise, a lot of it. So I just get, if you're not speaking, please mute your phone. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Marshawn and I are having a very interesting conversation, and I was just wondering if Jared or Dr. Long wanted to chime in on it.
Yeah, I'd like for Dr. Long, because we want to address this psychological, issue, you know, based on the conversation, you know, about the reentry. I mean, Dr. Long works with this daily, and how do we utilize these funds that are available now? I mean, we know the need, but we want to be sure that what we're doing and we want to be sure to address, you know, the need where it's at, people where they are, because psychologically, you know, I mean, I'm not the Dr. Long. But at the same time, there are certain things that I've seen with various programs and projects throughout the years. I've established homeless programs, transitional programs, schools, black schools. You know, I've done these things, but and I've seen all of these problems. With our people, with our children. I've talked to many, many young people, many, many youth. You know, even in my own family, you know, because of different types of crises that have happened here and happened there, you know, we have members of the family who are dealing with alcoholism, dealing with reentry issues, dealing with, you know, just, okay, I'm not going to do this type of a thing, period. So, you know, Dr. Long, are we on the right track? You know, we have to, you know, my conclusion is these programs and these projects, we have to meet the people where they are. Dr. Long. Even myself, you know, I've gone through some issues that Dr. Long is aware of over the past, 18 months that have had a serious effect on what I can do, what I won't do, and then what I feel that I've lost the ability to do, you know, based on nothing as drastic as being in a prison. So, Dr. Long.
Again, thanks, Dr. Mary Lee. The third week of this topic brought about by Mr. Kinsey has really been inspiring. I've been sitting and listening and trying to come up with some different questions and interpretations of what I'm hearing. So I guess I want to say something and then pose a question to Mr. Kinsey. And the backdrop of these comments is, those of us who live in Detroit know that this weekend is the celebration of an art form known as jazz in Detroit, which what I'm talking about is the jazz festival that's downtown. It's always free. I think it's the 28th year or so. And this time of year, I'm usually in contact with a lot of friends who happen to be musicians, most of them who I met at U of M. And a majority of them now live out of the country. And so the lineup this year, if you look at it, you'll be hard-pressed to see any African-American representation. So I kind of phrased that first. And then, I've heard everything that Mr. Marshawn Kinsey mentioned, and I agree with it. But I still, when we were talking about this concept about 2 weeks ago, I made an example about the Motown era and what was owned by African Americans now being turned over to others. So the question I have, and and I'm going to listen to some answers too. Hopefully, Dr. Tiny is on the call too. So, sort of in the same context in terms of what everybody's talking about, particularly as we talk about people coming out of confinement. And yes, I do work on a daily basis with African-American youth, majority age ranging used to be from 13 to 19. Now I have to say it's from the youngest of 8 to about 19. And my encounters with them, say it varies based on the kid, very seldom is it based on whatever crimes they committed. But the question I have is, contextually, can the art / culture of jazz be saved by the diaspora? which Mr. Kinsey has mentioned over and over. And the reason I phrase that question is because, you know, and this is from his presentation. It's kind of induced me to start looking at a lot of other books and things that I, you know, free reading and things like that. So I came across a book by Mr. Gerald Horn, and it's entitled Jazz and Justice. And, you know, the focus is on racism, politics, and the economy of music. So with this question, you know, I guess I'm asking an interpretation from twofold. So this art that African Americans created, which is now struggling and has really been regentrified by white Americans, really. Yet at the same time, I guess I want to know, how does that happen? I have my own thoughts about how it happens. It's sort of regentrification of an art form. Yet at the same time, we talked about this concept, particularly what Dr. Cannon has mentioned about the different music that young people are listening to. And I guess I want to know if Mr. Kinsey finds any correlation between this American art form known as jazz, quote, dying or being regentified, while our new art form, and, you know, people call it trap music, whatever you want to call it, does he see any correlation with the death of one art form with the rise of another, and does he see any manipulation with this new art form? And I do have my own thoughts about that, and I'll make some comments later in terms of how I kind of use both art forms to get across the point with a lot of young people downtown. But first, hopefully, he can understand the context of my question. I think it fits, and I hope you guys appreciate that it fits. So that would be my first question to Mr. Kinsey.
Yes, yes. You know, I think the most important key when we look at what's happening with jazz and what's happening with the hip-hop culture and disco and everything else we create, especially when it comes to music, is we look at it as the urban culture. And I think for a time there was always what was called kind of a ghetto. We knew that was black, kind of hood was kind of black. But when we got to the word urban, it kind of opened the door for everybody. You know what I'm saying? And so when urban was taken from us, and now, you know, urban was just another way of saying black without saying black. But now you can say, oh, in the urban community, oh, I'm hurt with urban these things. And this way, you know, everybody can kind of be black in a sense. You know, as a black person, I can never do anything to be suburban. And so the fact is that they start to see our culture is so profitable. That you know, it comes in there to where, you know, there's a lot of genres out there that exist, a lot of music out there that exists, but for some reason, you know, when we do our music, we just seem to just, you know, and we always keep evolving it because it kind of keeps getting stressed, it kind of keeps getting took no matter how we evolve. But when you make so much money from Motown, and you see it was so much money what Motown did, how do you expect them to sit there and watch jazz go do what it's doing or watch hip-hop do the same thing and just think that, oh, they're just going to make 100% of that? And that's the problem is with it is that they can't watch us make our own money in our own culture. And so what we have to do with the diaspora is probably one of the best solutions we have, because now we can take our culture into, because the element is, you know, we don't, I wouldn't have a problem with people like, you know, people who do rap music in Australia, you know, because that's not taking money away from us who built it here. The problem is they want to do our culture in our country. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, usually what happens is you come to somebody's country, you see where they got this, and you take it to your country, and you're able to make millions and millions of dollars in your country that you're not affecting the money in their country. But see, because everybody comes here, they don't recognize America as our country. Everybody kind of has two countries, and we kind of have one country. You know what I'm saying? In this case, you got your home country and your American country, but this is our home in American country. And I don't think people understand that. So when we put our culture out, we don't have nowhere, like, you know, when you go to someone else's country, they can express their culture at the fullest scale. But see, when we express our culture, oh, that's American culture. No, that's black. No, that's American. That's black. So we're fighting with this black American. Now, they don't fight that when it comes to black pastors. You can separate. Oh, no, we know black pastors. That's okay. We can have that all day. But when it comes to our culture and our hip-hop part, that part is something that they, that's necessarily, it's too influenceable to sit back and watch, you know, in a sense, you know, Planet of the Eight people, monkey-type people, have something to be that creative and make all the money. So, no, we have to be a part of that because nobody's going to talk about anything else. So they have to be in our mix. Well, we can't just own 100% of our company. You have to understand something. If you look at all the newest record companies that are coming out from every race, from Asians, Latinos, blacks, and whites, all of them are opening up hip-hop rap companies, bro. All of them hip-hop rap. All of them hip-hop rap, which is, okay, it's fine, but y'all not taking it back to y'all country where it don't affect us. So how do our kids and their own culture get to have their company? So they saturate our market so much. That's what they do. They saturate. Remember what they did to disco? They played disco so much that the audience was like, stop playing disco, I'm tired of it. Because everybody jumped in. Now, nobody jumps into their culture. You know, you don't see you don't see everybody in country like that. You don't see them in mariachi. You don't see them in salsa. You don't see nobody in nobody else's music like that at all. Only in our music where they come and feel that they're so involved and they understand it takes much to our kids. So when you look at the aspects, it goes back to the radio stations. Even out here in the radio stations, you turn on our radio stations, it's all kind of DJs but us. You got one black DJ, two black DJs on an all hip-hop radio station. How does that happen? How does that happen? You can't turn on a telenova or what's name and see a black on there talking or talking. Or, hey, listen to this new, check this out. It's just, you know, but everybody loves our culture so much that they want to come make money and take food away from us. And they don't understand that. So for us to keep getting our four, the diaspora is going to have to be set up in place to where as we get in here, we control our radio station, we control our sounds. We're going to take our music back. We got a country we're taking our music to that we're going to have from that country, make sure that our music and our culture is produced. And if it doesn't have this country flag on our culture or on our music, it's not our music. We have to solidify things in a way to where we control it by force because they won't let us eat with our own culture like they can eat with their own culture. I think Tiger just put on a Latino hat or he has something on and he had to apologize to them. But they can rap, they can say nigga, they can do all this and Tiger can't even put a hat on. You see how strong they protect their culture? You see how quick they say no. You can't even wear boots, hats, and with no. They cut it off quick. We don't do that. We let them nigga, hey, yeah, they get so controlled. Now they making more money in the culture than us. And then how do you take that from somebody? You know, how you get, mm-hmm. you know, my mom used to say, you know, you never get too common. They too common with us now. Everybody's so common mm-hmm. with us now that they don't think that it's ours. So they don't think they're doing anything wrong. It's American culture. It's part of American culture. But mm-hmm. you denying it, wanting it so much, you made us feel like, okay, I don't want to be a DJ jazz no more. I don't want to play jazz no more. Because, I mean, you're not giving the vibe. Because, of course, when jazz comes, the first thing they want to do, if you own the nightclub, I'm gonna let the white jazz player play. I'm going to let this jazz player play before I'm going to let the Negro one play to show his skills like anybody would do. And, of course, they're not going to broadcast that. So as soon as I take that, it's the same thing that's happening in hip-hop. As you start to progress it, you're going to see more coming in there. They're going to start to see more other races. I mean, it's all culturally all over the world. And we're the only one who everybody wants to be in our culture. There's five elements to hip-hop, MC and DJ and breakdancing and beatboxing. We have four elements of hip-hop. It's a cultural thing.
And what about that?
I mean, they have breakdancing contests all around the world. I'm sorry?
Yeah. I got that. What about Ethno Texas? That was started by blacks, right? Is it called Ethno Tech? I think is that what it's called? Anybody?
I'm not sure. Because
that mixture of the mixture of all of these different types of instruments and I don't know what it's called. But I know we started it, and we don't have it anymore. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Well, if you Google twerk and you say twerk, it's going to say popularized by Miley Cyrus. You see what I'm saying? Popularized. See, so what they'll do is they'll take our culture, smash it out, and take it. And so when you say the twerk, oh, you're not going to recognize that it came from black. And I'm not trying to promote or anything. I'm just saying, you know, when you look at the fist bump, mm-hmm. when you look at our history, like, mm-hmm. but back when I was growing up, they used to laugh at black people for the way we shook hands. Black white people can't just, so you can see Adam Sandler did a movie. White black people can't just shake hands like normal people. They always got to do what? It was a whole bunch of movies in the early 90s where all they did was make fun of the way black people started shaking hands and shook their hands, bro. And what the first thing they did, as soon as we started dapping them up the same way and doing our thing, they go on. And now you see the freaking president of the United States of America and the king of Dubai, they do a whole fist bump when they meet. A whole fist bump.
Exactly.
The black power fist bump that we got off our cone, the back of our black cone when we were afros, and put that fist and started begging each other with that fist, black power, bam, bam. Everybody doing that. And then they sit back and say, even in the movie Thor. Thor came in there and they're doing the Asgardian greeting and they're doing every black freaking symbol that we used to do back in the days for their greet. And I'm sitting back like saying, wow, bro. This how it, you know what I'm saying? And they don't think there's nothing wrong with that. Because again, you know, these monkeys, they, you know, they're shy. Oh, man, what are they going to do? No, because they won't let you play with their culture like that. When Lil Nas wanted to do country music, boy, you better not play with us like that. Threw them out of country music quick. They don't play with us like that with their culture. We the only ones who allow people to come and violate us, and then they want to say they're the king of our culture. We're the greatest in the culture. They win more awards in our culture than us as soon as we let them in. They got more awards in our culture than us. So we can't, we have to, at some element, why is it that we're losing the same thing we create? It's not that you want to come and be a part of it, but you come and literally dominate it to where we don't even have nothing to do with it no more. And they don't think there's nothing wrong with it. And it happens over and over again. The problem is you keep saying my people have mental illnesses, they're retarded, there's something wrong with them. It's every time they walk out the house, they can't be who they are because as soon as they start saying, yo, this, everybody start doing the dab dance. It's like we kind of do one thing that we can do that can separate ourselves so we can be some different from everybody. You know, it's like the only comfortable zone we have is to where the African dashikis and stuff represent Africa, and that's the whole part that they recognize us of. But they won't recognize our Americanhood, and that's what we need them to understand, because it's not making us profitable. We're the highest in unemployment, the highest in homelessness. Why can't we find a way to eat? And when we create a way to eat, they do it too. And they don't understand, look, I just want to feed my kids with something I create. And how about you feed your kids with something you create? And we can work this out. At least give us 10 years. But it's hard when somebody eats. It's just like the DJing. We used to mix with the turntables. It was turntables. But everybody couldn't do that. That was a skill that wasn't gifted. So what they do, they started pushing the buttons with the electric push button. It's easier that way. So what that do, that violated the market. Because now you got a million people who can push buttons compared to the 100,000 that can do this. And it's harder to do that, of course, now. So, of course, there's more DJs going to be on their computer putting the plug in there to the speakers, bang, bang, and pushing the button than actually turntabling up like old school. But that's the problem. So we get devoured in our culture. DJing was a black thing. But what they say, they created a professional DJ because nobody wanted to hire black people. If you want a mariachi performance, you're going to go call some Mexicans up and you're going to have them come do your mariachi show. That's how you're going to get down with them. You're not going to do anything else. You're not going to call nobody to come play with them. But they don't show us the same respect when I want to DJ, at least in hip-hop music. Even if they was the DJ, why y'all play our music when you're DJing in? And now you got DJs making $20 million and millions of dollars all over the world. Don't look nothing like us. There's no culture that we can go into and somebody else and do that. Nowhere we can go. We don't get the opportunity to do that. And they don't see how it violates us. So it's hard for us to create. It's hard for us to do anything and profit off of it. Like I told you the first time, what about the throwback jerseys? What happened with that? As soon as we got home, everybody else started saying that we never had a chance to even open up the company. As soon as the rims came out, back to with 20-inch rims, 14-inch rims, every tire shop opened up rims before we know it. We couldn't even open up. I don't remember nothing that we trade that I could actually walk in the store and buy. Anything I hear the rappers talk about, I can't walk in the store and buy it because by the time I buy it, it's 50 other stores. So they don't basically think black people are stupid. They don't take advantage of it. It's the competitive factor. It's the competitive factor that black people have to deal with, Asians, Latinos, Europeans, and every other race, and they own business still. And nobody else has to do that. It's not, we got to compete with each other and then everybody else. And everybody else has a market brand where, you know, they don't go mess with them. Asian shop at Asian location, Muslim shop. So nobody else, they keep to themselves. Latinos, they keep their business structured. It's all formatted. When you go to a plaza, you're going to see El Mexicano Plaza, and it's all their businesses right there structured. You'll never see an all-black business right there structured that's 100% owned like that. They won't let us have that. soon as we on Chris, I'll just turn on the streets of Chris. No, it's too much money being made over here. Y'all got all these stuff. No, y'all got to go. We can't even set up a place in Parlay yet. Soon as we set up a place in Parlay, they're going to buy it out. They got to go. We got to always rent from them. That's why we trying to buy as much stuff of ownership that we own so we rent from each other, taking the power out of that. The power out of the radio stations. We got to get our people plug in there, get our radio stations, and we put the music on the radio stations. So this way, now you're not making money from our culture. Now you can't make money. If you want to make money, pay us to be on there. They force our hands. They tell Barbara Allen, you can't have a car, you can't have a network. But then they tell black people, y'all stupid, y'all retarded, y'all can't have this because they want to control the content. Like we can't produce a good movie or a good content, a good old radio station, TV station. But you can, but not without us. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to see us do it without them because it's just too possible. Just imagine all the black shows that's out right now, right? They will probably be on Mary Lee TV. Just saying, Mary Lee TV's here. So take every black show that's out right now and put that on Mary Lee TV, all the Atlanta Hawkway, all that. That's on this network. So if you want to watch all the black stuff, you go to this network and you look at all the stuff we have out there and you add that up. I mean, just add up our catalog of music and our catalog of TV shows from Martin and Good Times and all that. Add that whole catalog up of everything we created and put it way over here and separate it from everybody else and tell me we ain't worth nothing. Motown from Hilton to all of our music catalog. Put that over here and tell me we monkeys and we dogs and we this and we that. Like I said, but I'm going to say what I got to say to build my people up because they didn't sit here and broke us down like we ain't built nothing. We built everything. Y'all, they took it. We don't have nothing to show for it. And then y'all call us retarded while you sitting there with all our money in your pocket. Get your hands out my pocket.
Just like I don't know how many people out there remember or this super soaker gun that Lonnie Johnson, that Bill, I mean, they did everything in the world that they could think of. How many years did he have fight in order to keep his invention? He was blind.
A toy. They can't let a toy.
When they put that ahead
a summertime
him,
toy.
I mean,
a seasonal
they
toy.
They gave him help. They gave him hell.
A seasonal toy. But a toy that you only use for 3 months out of the year. You just can't have that much power because you know what? Too many black kids will see you and they want to be like you. We don't want that. You're going to cost too many entrepreneurs. I'll shut him down. But I seen him and I said, I want to be like him. And all it needed was one. All it needed was one. Because they want to take that from all of us. Sit there so we don't have something like that to look up to and say despise you. No, just basketball and this right here is what you can do. Take him off the map. We don't want them to know they exist. And that's why we got to put men like y'all on the forefront so our young men can see these doctors out here, all these therapists and all these things, the work that y'all been out here doing. Like what Dr. Mary Lee has done in her time is like the Angela Bassett in economic development. She got the same amount of years of experience, been around the same people, trying to address the same thing. What's the difference in her work in economic development that she hasn't done in feet? So we got to categorize our women to these levels and make sure we know who we have and create our treasures so that our young women know exactly what our treasures are and what they look like. We need to go and hold on to Clarissa Shields and put her on the forefront like never before. There's no reason why Simone Biles shouldn't be on the forefront. Oh, I don't care what nobody, don't talk about no black women when you're not talking about Simone Biles or Clarissa Shields. All these black women, why you, all y'all YouTube channels I'm looking, you ain't said nothing about Clarissa Shields or Simone Biles, though. I see you talking about all these other girls, but y'all don't talk nothing about the good ones. All it's a whole bunch of girls that graduated, got their diplomas up, y'all don't say nothing about them. Y'all don't even want to talk about the ones you see in Turkey, but what about this one here that got 2 degrees, 7 degrees? You didn't post her up. What about the little one that just went to college at 10 years old? They don't put them up. The little girl that discovered and made pee, made energy out of the pee. Put them up. So this is the kind of aspects of where we're going so that we can push and show these aspects of we are out here. It is real. You can't have a corporation. You can be this and you can do this and do this because they shut us down for the smallest things. They won't let us eat. And then people don't think there's nothing wrong with it. Like, well, there's something wrong with that. That you treat the whole race of people that you forced into the curse, you treated like slaves, and then you allow everybody else to do what they can't. Now, they're not going to shut nobody else's toy shop down, but just his. Why? Because the influence that once you do that one toy gets big, he can do something else and it takes off. And that one corporation now is as big as Coca-Cola and Ford. And now they're going to think black people equal to us because they can have corporations just like us. So if a black person has a Fortune 500 company and I got a Fortune 500 company, then how am I better than him? No, keep that nigger right down there so that way I can make sure that I'm pure and he's a nigger. Because if he's at the same place as me, it's a problem.
And we can't say, you know, we cannot ignore the systemic racism and say, you know, that racism is gone. It is not. You know, where I live here in Michigan, where when I'm in the state of Michigan, it's a suburb of Detroit, and right in my own subdivision, there was a news that was placed, you know, and this has been within the past 12 months to 2 years, a noose in a black person's front yard on their tree. So, you know, this is in the state of Michigan, okay? So we cannot say that it's gone. It is not gone. But I'm going to go back to Dr. Long so that Dr. Long can finish your question.
I think we're all hit on the same thing, that just from a psychiatric or psychological dynamic perspective. There's a term, there's two defense mechanisms called projection. Then there's the other one called projective identification in terms of, you know, what white, how they view us, and then how sort of a twisted way of dealing with their own, inferiority and superiority to, you know, your step on our necks and things like that. And I think we all understand that, but I guess my primary focus is, and I think we're all trying to move in that direction of how do we improve the insight of the masses of us. And so I'll just say what I try to do downtown. And, you know, those who live in Michigan, of course, have seen the Juvenile Detention Center in the news for the last month. Castles from Channel 7, 18, youth breakout and do all these other things, which is really, you know, it kind of goes back to Dr. Claude Anderson. If you can control the narrative in the media, then people think it's true. So, you know, I'm down there 24/7, and whatever Channel 7 is reporting is not factual in terms of the context. If you don't have any concern or interest for youth and you're 80 bodies under staff and the economics for each kid, you know, it only takes 37 cents to feed a kid on a daily basis, so that's 37 times 3 for 3 meals. But, you know, what I've come to, and it kind of goes back to this whole art form of jazz, which was created by us, from our extension from Africa, and uniquely being in America dealing with the blues, slavery, and all that other sort of stuff. But I guess I'm focusing on if whites are in position to control the narrative through music, et cetera, and, you know, of course they steal the music, is some forms of hip-hop rap, is it being used by whites to destroy some of our other creations? And, you know, I still come back to using jazz because what I've started to do downtown is when a kid comes to my office and they want different lyrics printed off, and I usually go to this it's YouTube. It's called azlyrics.com, and they usually ask for Lil Durk or all these other guys, and I sit there and I listen to them because I want to know where they're coming from. But I say 9 times out of 10, once I'm listening, and they'll say, that's a lot of excuse for this language, and that, and I say, well, interpret it to me. Some of them can interpret some of it, but for the most part, the interpretation is somewhat superficial, but I understand they're kids. But 9 times out of 10, I can come back with, you know, a lyric or a song or a genre that I grew up with. And, I mean, they get it. I mean, it solves the issue that they may be dealing with. And they say in one case, this young man is dealing with the fact that he broke probation and his mother turned him in. So it took about 2 weeks before he even wanted to talk to his mom. But, you know, I encouraged him to come to the office. We kind of traded off. You know, I said, I need you to listen to something that I think could, you know, turn you around. I think will make you want to call your mother. And so, you know, we pulled some songs from Lil Durk and some other artists that they're really interested in. And I listened to it patiently and everything. I said, okay, now I want to listen to the song. And the title was Mom, M-O-M. And if some of you may remember that song from Earth, Wind, and Fire in the early 70s. You know, so I said, well, I want you to listen to the song and tell me if you feel like calling your mom. And he listened to it, and I could just see it. He was trying to resist hearing those lyrics. He was talking about how mom and the light of the world, things like that. And so that just having him listen to an era of music that I grew up in and I appreciated and listened to those very spiritual lyrics, I mean, it turned the key for him to pick up that phone and start a conversation with his mother. So I guess in using that example, I want to know if Mr. Kinsey sees any correlation with, let's say, with Dr. Carl Jung's perspective, you control the media and what people listen to. Do you see any forms of, I'm not saying all rap, do you see any forms of rap being used to distort the narrative of our young people and at the same time, you know, lead to the end of another genre of music that we created?
Yes, that is. It is definitely the season for them. You know, like I say, I like to pick a nigga, because you can just go get any black dude off the street, get him some tattoos, put his hat on backwards, put some Jordans on him, put some chains around his neck, you know what I'm saying, put some gold in his mouth, and get a writer for him, put him in the studio, and you can make $1 million from him. Easy money. Easiest money you can do. You can just pick a nigga, just any nigga you want. Just put him up some tattoos on him, get this up, and go have a good writer. You pay somebody to write for him, bam, 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 and it's easy. So easy to manipulate, to make money. So they can see when you got a people that you can manipulate like that, you're going to milk that. It's hard not to be able to milk that, because I can make $1 million from him right now by just putting this in half of this guy, and he's going to be happy because I'm going to make sure I get a foster kid. You know what I'm saying? I'll make sure I get a kid come from some heartache that I see, need, and really ready to do it. And he, for $1 million, just say this, man, and you can go. And when you get that power, you want to use that and use that and use it. There was a time when, you know, they so careless with it. There was a time when, you know, when we grew up, we had Lil' Kim. But you know what? We have Lauryn Hill, too. We had MC Light. You know what I'm saying? We had so many other music that if the young women didn't want to listen to Lil' Kim or that wasn't their thing, they always could turn on, you know what I'm saying, Queen Latifah. You know what I'm saying? They could turn on somebody else, you know, Lady of Rage and stuff, you know? So there was other options out there that existed, TLC and like, you know? And so these times, we don't have that. They make sure that they control the narrative that is just hoochie, 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 hoochie stuff, you know? And it's like, and I know a lot of women out there that are lyricists, that out there that can hang and get out there and do what needs to be done. But again, it's all about distribution. It's about us being their distribution. And we need to control it, not from the music side only, but as our commercial side. Because when we talk about these hospitals that we want to open up, these schools we want to open up, we've got to let the people know they're there. So how are we going to reach the people? That means we got to go to their networks. We got to go to their radio stations to try to get the people to listen to us. So we've got to control those aspects. So we're going to trade those aspects. So that way we have our own within the diaspora, because with that market, that's $1.5 billion. It's easier to go and market and sell a market that you have 1.5 billion, then you have 40 million people. And so that's why the diaspora is really important, because with that market, it opens up all of our television, all of our music, all of our culture to not just us here, but it opens us up to the 1.5 diaspora that nobody else can touch, that you can't go in there. Because like I said, a lot of these other countries that everybody comes from, the dark-skinned people in their country are treated like crap. If you go to these Asian countries, these Latino countries, you go and see the darker skinned people, and it's not with all due respect, but they live in the most poorest and they treat them the worst. And it's factual. You can look it up. You go there. They treat them the worst. And so these are the ones we want to say, like us, who treat, let us all come together and let's all build. I'm going to train some here where we got the best training and everything right here in the States, and then we're going to send them out there to train you, and then you're going to train more of you, and then you're going to come and bring your businesses to this country. They're going to bring this, because every place got something different. Haiti may have some vegetables that they don't sell over here in Puerto Rico. So now we're creating a trade zone, and now we need captains to take this boat of vegetables to this place over here. Those are jobs. We need people to dig these jobs. These are the jobs now that we had these people coming out of jail for. So this is the concept, essentially, is to go into the diaspora and essentially say, this is where we can now take all of our ambitions, all our dreams, and we can kind of go in here and build, you know what I'm saying, with the people who understand what we've been through. You know what I'm saying? These people stuck in the place like we were stuck. Fortunately, we fought for civil rights. You know what I'm saying? And I try to tell people, you know, we have to, they don't understand the blood we shed. They don't think, they forget about all the red summers when the police shot us and killed us. They don't see that part. Everybody saying my civil rights, American civil rights, but y'all didn't bleed. Y'all didn't shed in there. It's like everybody talks about us like, you know, we the scum of the earth and y'all planet of the apes and we's this and all this stuff is set. But in place, but at the end of the day, we fought a government that we couldn't run from, that we couldn't escape because there was no America for us. You see, when things got hard for everybody else and it gets hard for them, when their government, not them, when their government not providing the necessary essentials and tools for that country to do what it needs to do, the people start to flee and they come here. When our country was beating us, killing us, and murdering us, and hanging us, and tar and feathering us, and raping our daughters, and taking our language away, taking our reading away from us, you know, for just even pray, couldn't even have a church, get praised for even having a religion, get killed for having a religion. When that was happening to us, we still kept fighting in the midst of all that. We fought, and we fought for something called civil rights, and we the only people who did that and shed all that blood for the civil rights, and we the only ones who don't get to enjoy it, and it's not fair. It's not fair. Why can't we enjoy a piece of something that we died in love for? It's nothing personal, but nobody else did that. Not for this civil rights. Not for this year. So, like I said, we have, you know, we need that better. And so we have to tell them that this is why we're doing it, because we want to be able to taste that. Because if other thing else, it's always open up to people of everybody, people of color. And it's nothing personal. But at the end of the day, man, we're not making money from anything we create. Everything we created, you name it, they have always found a way to buy it. And like I tell people, well, we can sell our stuff. Yes, we can. But you have to ask yourself, what happens when we said no? You see what happened with the toy guy. He had a freaking toy company, just the Super Soakers. 2 or 3 seasons, now you don't even see him no more. He could have been making the biggest Super Soakers coming out. Every year we could have had the thing set up in place, but they can't let him have that. Can't let him have that. Not one. No, we can't let you do that. No, can't. Nope, Nerf is it. You're not Nerf. No, we can do Nerf. We can do it all day. But you, no, you can't. Because the color of your skin. That's the only reason why. I'll send my deal because the color of your skin. But anybody else can, the other people of color can come do it, though. If you don't understand, yeah, I know you're people of color, but you can come do what I still can't do in a country that I died and dead for, that I thought it got hung for. That's the problem. It's the fact that you can still do it. I'm watching you do something, and then when I do it, I get my hand swatted away, and my people die for it. And I'm like, what? So, yeah, that's why they come in there and then they control the narrative on our radio station. They put them in our radio station. So when you turn the power 106, you're going to see everybody else but us. You're going to maybe see one dude in the evening, one dude if they ain't switching. Big boy, we need to blow Big Boy, get Big Boy over here so we can blow our station up. You know what I'm saying? And then we'll do this and then they'll act like he don't exist no more and bring somebody else in that don't look like us. And then that person, what he going to do? He going to bring people that look like them in. And then when you turn on their station, all you see is people that look like them in our culture representing our music. Talking about our culture, somebody else, and you will never see black people or any Asian Latino talking about their culture, talking about that music. You go on YouTube channels, you see all these Asians, all these Latinos, all the white people talking about all the black stuff, all the gang violence and everything that's happening on. You don't go to no station to see black people talking about what Asians are doing or what Latinos are doing in their community and violence and stuff. We don't never look at their stuff. We don't never broadcast their stuff out to the people. Whatever y'all do, we keep it quiet. But every time we do something, everybody got the world know what we doing. So the world have no choice but to look at us like dogs, because when we want to push our agenda, say, okay, look, this is my inner city, this is my hood, we were talking about our hood, everybody else talking about our hood too, like, damn, I can't even get my voice. Can I talk about my stuff? Can I talk about my community? No, we can't, because they feel our community is their community. So you go on YouTube, our black YouTube channels got to compete with every other Asian and every Latinos and white YouTube channel. Why? In our own culture, about talking about our own narratives, talking about our own stuff, we still got to have my YouTube channel got to compete with yours. And you get on your YouTube channel, yeah, brother, this is it, dog, how it's going to hang it with it, bang it with it, sing it, this is me, OB, no, so, and you're like, man, come on, man, for real, bro, for real. You know what I'm saying? And it eats us up. And I don't think they understand that. You see, as we try to build up the places we try to do, we want to buy more wood. If we start buying wood, people going to say, oh, man, they buying wood and building wood up on that. Then guess what? They're going to start buying wood. And then this person going to start buying wood. And guess what happens? The price of wood goes up. And that's what always keeps. So no matter what we do with our music, once we start doing it, oh, shoot, I got to get a piece of that. And the price going to start going up, and it's bad for us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. So, Dr. Lawrence, you have any further questions, comments?
Yeah, only thing I'll say is, when we started the series with Mr. Kinsey, I didn't know what to expect, but out of all the topics we talked about, for some reason, this one is just happening, like my brain is just spinning in all different directions. As he was talking, you know, I was thinking about how black folks, we just, you know, we have all this creativity, but we open the door for people, then they take over. And I was listening to a narrative about 2 weeks ago about 45 records and A and B side. And I kind of vaguely remember that growing up, but they gave credit to a local DJ for allowing a European song to play on a soul 45 from the soul genre, you know, American black radio. And, you know, it credited Donnie Simpson for playing the B-side of a song by a European artist by the name of Elton John. Elton, you know what I'm talking about, Elton John.
Yeah,
and that song happened to be Benny and the Jets, and then it just took over black radio. And I'm like, wow, you know, this has been going on. Then the question is, why do we do that? You know, why do we keep doing it? I mean, we're waiting for acceptance or, you know, it's just
acceptance.
And at the end of the day, we suffer. So, I mean, it sparked a lot of thoughts and a lot of questions I had for myself and just for the panel.
We specialize in, we try to do a lot. We try a lot to try to make them understand that we don't want to hurt you. We don't want to come with the same ill. We always feel like they think we want to ride and do what you did to us. And that's not even our agenda. We don't have that.
Exactly.
So when they come and say, man, let me be a part of this, we say, you know what, I'm going to open the door for this. Because if this is a way I can extend your hand to let you know that I'm not trying to hurt your kids, I'm not trying to put your people in slavery, I'm not trying to hang you, all I want to do is feed my children. I don't have a problem.
God, what happened?
Oh, we lost you. Marshawn.
And we get robbed for that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and we get robbed for that, for trying to do that. And that's the problem, you know. We just want to let you know we don't want to hurt you. And so by doing that, you know, we're not racist. We're not like everybody else. So we let other cultures into our stuff because like, we're not like them. Come on in here. But when they come in here, they get their feet up, they drinking, and then they stay stairs. Because we let them sit so long, and now 50% of hip-hop are the Latinos now.
Well, we have to maintain ownership, you know, regardless. I mean, we have to stop what we're doing. So I want to ask you, Marshawn, though we're ending the series tonight, I would like you to come back next week for the Out of Africa the team. And, you know, I think that's going to, I think this will bring, be really, really be powerful, you know, to have you here and, if, you know, to share. I believe I saw Dr. Cannon. Let's see. I believe I saw Dr. Cannon somewhere. I do want to come to, okay, Dr. Long, you had more, then I wanted to go to Jared, and as we start to kind of wind down. But I definitely would like you to come back next week and join the conversation. And also, I want everyone to know that our guest next week will be joining us from Africa. And so it's going to be 4 a.m. their time. And so we want to, like, you know, welcome them and be here for them next week and have a great show. They're bringing some very valuable information. Well, it looks like people are being kicked off here. Okay, Dr. Long, it looks like you were kicked off there for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know. That's never happened with this phone, so I don't know what that was all about. But I didn't have anything else, but, you know, just I'd like
Dr.
to tell Mr. Kinsey that, you know, his presentation in this third week has been really insightful and inspiring in terms of dialogue and, you know, having, you know, stimulating the approach of looking at things from a broad perspective. And you're right, it's not only just news and sports and stuff like that, but I think, you know, my colleagues on the call will even acknowledge that, you know, we're in the midst of that in this matrix in terms of trying to have some existence and do what we do as physicians. So, you know, it cuts off all ways as it comes to African Americans and Americans. But again, I appreciate Mr. Kinsey's focus, his mission, and again, congratulate him for all his efforts.
And I'd like
Thank
to
you
say,
so much.
But Mr. Kinsey involved is really opening the doors for, you know, everyone, you know, with who I'm here. You have your missions, and, you know, your goals, aspirations, business ideas. We definitely have sources for everyone on here to fulfill. Marshawn.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. You know, yes, that is you know, our vision and what we can do as a people is limitless, you know, especially when we go into diaspora and add that 1.5 billion and then on top of that have in Africa, that really opens the door for us, our businesses, our advantages for our youth and for our children. We need to build these things up, get our semiconductors built, train our kids in this and build these up somewhere and have these things set so we can start producing our phones, producing our things so that our youth have these things within a generation that won't be bombed, that won't be took. I know we all can not sleep comfortable knowing that if we build a semiconductor here in the States that it'll be here 10 years from now still in the control of our people. You know, we can't navigate ourselves in this country after all we've done here. And it's nothing personal, you know, that you know, the main thing is just to get out the way, for them to get out of our way. We have the plan. We know what we need to do. Logistically, we can all make sure that we can be centered in a place where, you know, we really know and taste the whole idea of freedom. And I think that that's one thing that they have truly kept from us, and people don't see that in a little smaller scale realm because they just keep us from owning anything of power to broadcast, and that in a sense it just holds us back from us being able to maintain. They won't let us have our own radio station that's going to broadcast on a national level because they don't want us talking to each other at one time with one voice. because that's just too much power after all the trees we've been hung on. And so it's time that we don't ask for the power. We just go ahead and force our hand and take what we have in it, in a sense, and that's the ability to build. And we can do that because we built this country. We just need y'all to get out the way.
Yes.
And that's all we're asking, with all due respect.
Right. Jared.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
You want to chime in?
Yeah. I've just been listening and absorbing, you know, everything. It's always a pleasure to hear Mr. Kinsey talk. He everything he says, he hits the nail on the head and, you know, opens up a new door. But something did come to mind, and I want to kind of preface this, you know, as the layperson in the room to kind of, you know, make a connection here. And that is, I think that we as a people still got work to do on trying to deprogram, right? You know, it's almost like being caught in a rip current. You know, we can't see the value of our own, you know, ability to deal with that because we're constantly being thrown back and forth by whatever torrent is happening at the time, right? Like when we first start doing it, then you have this pushing on your back that, or actually you're pushing on your front to push you back because they want to devalue it, right? I mean, like back in the day when I was coming up, somebody called you a rapper, that was a pejorative. That was, you know, like them trying to insult you and say that you didn't have any musical talent or anything else, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then when times changed and that persisted and your feet were in that sand and they couldn't knock you out of it, then the wave switched the other way. And you're still off balance because now you have this huge flow trying to push and take what you put out there and push that out ahead of you, right? So you're just scrambling, trying to hold on to whatever it is that you have, you know, and it brings to mind another part of the perspective here. And that comes down to how we act or how we do when we take on such a thing as this blessing that Mr. Kinsey has given us, right? And that is, we have to understand that as a diaspora, we are in another person's, we've been pushed into another person's idea, their concept of life, their concept of land, right? We need to own those concepts of us inside of those things. And I've said this before. In fact, Dr. Lee, I said it on your show the second time I was on, I think, which is we need to understand that we do have a power, that there's something in us to praise and to always be proud of, right? When we understand our black philosophy and we understand the us that's in these things, it makes clear sense the direction to go, like by instinct. You got to think about how this music we've created has been that thing that has come purely from our instinct. But we can't make that connection with these, you know, influences that are out there in this system that's strange to us. It's crazy, you know, almost an insanity trying to get to it, you know. But I think that if we get to a place where we can start appreciating local heroes again, where we can start appreciating the value that comes from us just being us, communicating with us, then we start understanding us again outside of all these distractions, right? We kind of, even in our own culture, we're kind of torn between two different houses, right? That is the house of the loving Big Mama who taught us all to not be ugly, don't be nasty to that person that's out there. You invite them in and you help them out because you don't know what the Lord is leading them through, right? That's that soul food aspect. But then we got the warrior aspect where we have to fight all the time. And like Mr. Kinsey is saying, we have to fight even for an identity. We can't even put something out of, that comes out of our instinct out there without it being co-opted and stolen, right? But if we get back to the place where we understand there's value even in those small things, I think we got the win. We got the checkmate. We just have to see that that checkmate is sitting on the board because they'll keep telling you lies and moving pieces even though the game was over 7 moves ago, right? And one of the ways we do that, we've always said it even since the 60s and 70s, hell, even since the 50s, we've said the game is to be sold, not told. And you've got artists out there who've been saying the same thing over and over and over again, the George Clintons, the CeeLo Greens, the Andre 3000s, you know, the Big Boy, all these guys out there who've been telling you they speak in double entendres because there's a level that only we will understand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you those things about going back and understanding your roots. Go back to knowing who you are and be proud of who you are. Don't go and try to mimic what these people have set up in their system. Even the Lord said you don't go out here and behave like those people. You go out here and you keep the covenant that we established. So we can't bring their practices in and think that that ain't evil for us. It's not made for us. It wasn't designed for us. We have to take all of this, our understanding, and show that we have a mastery of it and put it back in our hands, because then they can't touch it. They can't come anywhere near it. We'll be so far ahead of them light years, like Prince was, right? Prince was light years ahead. He was so far ahead.
Right.
They still did. People didn't understand what that brother did in the 80s until the 2000s.
Right.
That's how far ahead he was. You feel me?
Right.
And that came straight up from his soul, right?
Right.
Mike shocked the whole world. Michael Jackson, he came out of that. Hey, Roger Troutman. Roger Troutman locked himself in a basement for 2 years and invented the voice synthesizer. He came back out with computer now, and people lost their mind.
Right.
So, I mean, the power still exists with us. We just have to recognize that that power is there. We have to get off of this PTSD pit that they have put us on. We've got PTSD. We have gone through so much trauma that that is the thing we focus on instead of focusing on the idea that we're the ones purveying these things that they want to follow. It's not so much them all the time keeping us. We forget. We tend to forget. We have forgotten our black philosophy. We have forgotten our black identity. We've forgotten our black notions in a lot of ways. But when we hold on to these, how many times do you think you're going to have the hot girl on the block go down there and date the guy who got to get up and go and work at the auto shop?
Right.
That's building homes. We don't appreciate the James Evanses no more. We don't appreciate, you know what I'm saying, the cats who got to work with their hands. Hell, Fred Sanford had wisdom to pass, too. He was always faking like he was going to have a heart attack, but he was still passing some knowledge, you know what I'm saying? And then shows like Rock, right, with that. Even the opening theme is still one of those things that stick with you. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child has got his own. Child has got his own, understands the struggle to get to that point, right? So I guess where I'm leading to and the question that I wanted to ask is, how do you see putting the effigy of black culture and black philosophy and black understanding and black perspective back into those places that belong only to us? Because you can build something as a structure that works, but if you don't have that element that's there to keep it together, that glue, which that's another thing I like to say, that good glue, and this is more of that good glue, keeps it together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see it progressing? Because you can build it. It'll be a titan. It'll be strong, but there'll be somebody who'll be willing to sell it out because they didn't connect with it.
Okay. Yep. And that's one of the key elements. So the major factor for us is there's two things that we want to make sure we do, that we control the very aspects of our media. So as we prepare, we sign up, we're getting our media, we're making sure we have a foundation set, that we have our own outlets for media and radio, so that way it's set up in there and in place. And so this way now, within the diaspora, as we have all these listeners and stuff that's set up in place, we have our own sort of equipment that's being utilized, that broadcasting our knowledge, our media, and our stuff. So that this way now what we do is we take people like you, people like Mary, Dr. Mary, and we start to create our animation TV shows, where now we got our animation shows where they're doing scientists, they're having disclosures, but they got Dr. Mary scientists here, and they're doing this right here, and they're starting the business. It didn't work in the field, but we're trying, you know. But these are where we touch the field in business, but this is just turning little kids on and learning that you go out there with the business and, you know, you get this set, but if it fails, if this go wrong, this could go wrong, how to fix that. So these are the things that we need to do to make sure so that we create these little bonds in there. So we go in there, we do our own Muppets, we start to create that and set that up where we're teaching. We have our music that's going in there. And the second thing is, we're looking at, we going to our sport, you know, we have as we're starting this to prepare everything, whether we go to Swahili as a native language, we have the gummies coming out that are just going to be different words and different alphabets that are all in Swahili with different words and stuff that we're going to start buying and selling, so that the kids now eat the candy, they get to say the word before they eat it and all these things. So we're starting to teach them these words words, and so now we're going into our own language, you know, because, see, remember, at one time, you know, Ebonics was a black word. Ebonics was the black, how blacks talk. That's what Ebonics was. But, you know, at some point, it became so feasible for everybody else to start talking like us, it became urban, and now it's urban talking. So now you turn on the TV, and everybody talking urban. I mean, you turn on the little, there was a time when you could turn on Disney, and, you know, kind of like everybody kind of had their ethnicity. Now everybody is like, yeah, dog, we going to the West Bay, y'all, man. You must be crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody is urban now. You know what I'm saying? And so that they'll understand that that takes our money, because like you said, you know, when we say a word like drip, next thing you know, I walk into Ross or you walk into a store, you see drip clothing all over. Whatever black people say, that word is automatically going to be cooking and snatched out there. So the thing is, we have to teach our youth and our music and things, anything you say, anything you put out there, copyrighted, trademark, every word you say, so that this way when you put it out there, you can make your own search, you can make your own things. The thing is, we are just such a loving people. We just love the art and love the music. You know, we don't look at everything as just always making profit from it. And people see that, oh, he's stupid. They're retarded because they don't get a trademark and they didn't get that. Man, we just wanted to do some music and just show the Western world. We didn't know that you wanted to steal it and go make $1 million. If we had thought about that and the idea of doing that, then we would have done all that. So we are a different type of people. So people see that in us and they look at us as a negative thing, like, oh, they don't do business right, or they're special. Like, man, we don't look at, you know, have a copyrighted word that we just, oh, let's find type of, let's super looses, baby. That's super looses, baby. We don't know that super looses, everybody like that word, and now super looses on every t-shirt, and somebody then took it and made it look, and you sitting back saying, dang, wow. You know, that's how valuable we are. Just the word drip, and you put it in the soul, and you can make shirts off that. And so when you see that, you have people of every people just watching and waiting for the next big word. What's the next hot thing any rapper say? Oh, that's a new word. They're going copyrighted before you don't even know it's a word. It's copyrighted. And then you get to say it, and next thing you know, you're getting lawsuit and sued for saying some stuff you invented on your own thing. And this is what happened. This is what happens.
Right.
But, you know, we have to control the very four aspects of everything that we do, in a sense, to the parts where, you know, we it's nothing personal. We have to be very transparent that we want to do this. You know, because the thing is, as we start to get our commercials out, everybody else is using rap music in their commercials. Pastrami, yummy, yummy. Pastrami, yummy, yummy. $5, bro, $5. You just look at the commercials. Back in the time, there was Folgers in your cup. It's not fun. You know, everything was creative. You had the McDonald's dude with the thing, with the McMoon, and he was playing on the piano, and you had the Noid running around with the Domino's pizza and stuff. And now it's just, you know what I'm saying, yo, $5 with the 5 pizzas. And, oh, yeah, get it. Come on, man. And that's what it is. It's selling everything. So we don't even have a chance to sell our stuff because we don't have no corporations, because they know, like, well, if black people come and they're using these nuts and they're using their language, we're not going to be able to use it. So you see all these different things that we made famous and little slogans. You see companies named after that. Two hot, two punches in a biscuit, you know, two pieces of the steak, whatever it is, you know. You'll see all these stuff owned by everybody else, just little slogans. Mama said, knock you out. All these little stuff you'll see. These little shops owned by everybody else, because we're just a big money popper people. When people seem to fail, they just come and be black. Because remember, when we had DJing, it was DJing, but they said, oh, you, that's a niggers saying you're a DJ. That's Negro stuff. So they made professional DJ to separate ourselves from them. They wouldn't even be respectful enough to just come on and say they're DJs and whistling. When they came in the game, they called themselves a professional DJ, like you using turntables and stuff. We're professional. Black people never referred to professional DJ, but that's how disrespectful it was to our culture and how they are to us. So when you see that blame disrespect, and it's worth billions, you could sell $100 million search for $4. Come on.
Like where they
you know?
Took,
so when you're getting that in there, that's why we have to essentially use the diaspora, create our manufacturing, our warehouse, and build those out. They already got manufacturing places in Haiti, already in Africa. These places already exist. This is why we couldn't get into the auto industry after we can make cars with the booming system and get all that, and we have to go buy everybody else's kind of audio equipment, Alpine, and we got all the new, the hot little, you know, I forgot, you know, the all the new little sound stuff from everybody else's thing, but we never had a black-owned speaker company because we didn't have a manufacturer producer, even though we the one that came up with the booming system. It was us who talked about driving around with the cars in the 90s with the bass boom, blah, boom, bass boom. That was us. But we never, ever bought no boom. We ain't bought no black on boom box. Never. Never. Even when we had the boom radio station in the 90s, when we had the big old radio that we had on our shoulders walking around, that was never black owned. We never made those, you know? So it's time that we get to that point, that when we start creating those atmospheres, those images, we own those things. So the next time a dude walking around with that big old beatbox on his shoulder, that's a black-owned beatbox machine he's walking with, and that's popularized. I don't have a problem with the Nikes and the Kangos and the Whistling Parts, but it's just a shame that it's not one of us. Not one of us. The car company, right. Not one. Everybody else got a car company, not one of us. And we made it hot. Mm-hmm. I don't care what people say. Oh, shoot, man, come on, man. I grew up in the 80s. I've seen people getting killed for Jordan and Watts and Compton. I've seen getting jumped in fight. And I remember when they took county money back from a lot of women because they said, y'all spending money on shoes, $200 shoes, and they was making fun of women on GR and stuff, talking about y'all getting this GR money, spending $200 on shoes, and that's wrong, and this and this and this and this. But they just wanted their son to have, their daughters to have their son to have a different part. They don't need hood, and they in the projects, here's these shoes that can go, you know. And I remember that, and I remember every other race, like, man, we would never spend $200 on shoes with the family and everything. It was disrespectful to spend $200 on a pair of shoes. And then as soon as black people kept wearing their shoes, all the connoisseurs became, everybody else became shoe connoisseurs. Everybody's a freaking shoe connoisseur. And it's nothing personal, but it's just like, man, every business that we kind of can grow big and we kind of really put out their eardrum, you know what I'm saying? And people say, well, how is it? I said, man, look, Tom Brady is the greatest football player on the planet, but I ain't never seen a pair of his shoes, with all due respect. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just saying when y'all say it's not that, but what it is what it is. What it is, this is what it is. I ain't never seen a pair of shoes. I know he's the greatest athlete on the planet, but so when you tell me we don't have nothing to do with that, it's hard for me to believe that, bro, with all due respect. But we don't make no money from it at all.
Right.
There's individual licensing deals and stuff like that, right. But it's not found here where we need it. We need it here. We need to be able to take our young men who are making these shoes and say, you can go get hired by our Gucci and make the shoes for them.
Right. Thank you. We want to this is great. This is wonderful. But I want to get our sister Judith, if she's got any comments or remarks before we wrap it all up tonight. Thank you. Thank you so much, Derek. Sister Judith?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Do you have any comments? Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Yes. Just trying to find out. This is amazing. Believe me, I had on my seatbelt and I was buckled up because I knew this was going to be, we were going for a ride. A serious ride. And what I'm trying to say is I'm an entrepreneur. I explained last week that I had a restaurant on Quantico Marine Base. And the thing about it is, for us little people, we try. Well, I'm just starting 7 months in, and I would love to do the things that he's talking about, to hire, you know, people that, you know, need. You never know, it might be a cook that's in the jail, or, you know, somebody that, you know, just want to do waiting, or just have somebody under my wings to say, this is how you cook this, this is how you cook that. And, you know, so they can open up their own business, you know, after a while. And also I would like to have, like, open up other restaurants, you know, not just only on the Marine Base, but other places, you know, like in Michigan or in Jersey or, you know, different places like that. But sometimes, like you said, the little people get pushed down because they're not seeing them because they are little. And believe me, on the Marine Base, they were very, very good. I mean, they support us. They tell us, make sure, you know, that they want us to stay open because there's nothing, that type of food there for them, you know. And that's why we're doing, you know, well, we could be doing better. But like I said, if we want to actually, like I said, hire other people, but right now we can't do it, you know. So it's a lot of things that has to be done to the place in order for it to actually be recognized. Because a lot of people still keep saying, even though we advertise and, you know, Google, we have 4.9 on Google, but a lot of people still don't know that we're there, you know. So that's where the finances come in to actually build it up so we can move on and do, you know, other things, that, you know, do bigger things, you know, like you say, in Africa. I would love to open up a restaurant in Africa, you know. But everything that was said, I mean, I visualize it and I see a whole lot of these things happening. I see it. But, you know, we also have that, like you said, that $1 billion that we have to work at it. We have to actually work at this to find out where is it coming from. You know what I mean?
Well, see, remember, it doesn't, you know, we can look at the money part and set that up, and that's good and dandy, but remember, we don't need that. Remember when Steve Harvey was doing the Hoodie Awards, he was going to all these little inner city, little small businesses, putting them on the wall, and he was coming up. You see what I'm saying?
That's what
that set up in there and goes to these black businesses throughout the state, has a YouTube channel. He going, and he just goes to all these different places and more, and we support him. So he goes, when he goes to your place, when it, you know,
we keep losing you.
You're breaking up a little. Yeah, you're breaking up.
Make you different, and then we can have a Ugandan meal. You can have a Haiti meal. You can have a Tanzanian meal. You can have so many different brands from your place with them. It's going to be very easy for you now that you. Buy this product for them that's going to go into your food that you're making. It's very easy for you to go back there and open up your shop and create these bonds. So now that you got your marketing, you got your what's name set up in place, and now you got a business here in Africa that's supporting the people there, that's supporting you here, and then you got your business here and a franchise here, and now you got one in Haiti, and now you got one. And if we had 100 different black women having their different foods, from soul food, from this part, doing the same thing from Brazil to Haiti, from here to here to here, and everybody got a spot yet, it's very simple to get it done. They're ready to ship their vegetables to you. They would love to have the market. So it's not about having a building to get the market. The market is there. That's why I think when they come on Africa and Africa comes, they'll tell you it's the market there. So the thing is we don't have the negligence and create those networks. That's why we got to create our diaspora division that's going to be agriculture, that goes out there, finds all the stuff we need, puts it on the website, and here's where you can get all this. This is the cost, and tell me what you need. This is what the diaspora is set up to do. This is what we're putting together so that you have access to all the stuff you need to get put in place so that when this stuff is going, oh, it's a drought in California, where that place is here where we can get this done without having to worry about that. Places are now being flooded. That's flooded right now. They have big floods in other places. Yes. It's flooded. They don't know how to chop the
water. And that's what we need. Exactly.
That's what
we need.
We need to take that water.
Yeah, we need the connection.
And bring that water over here for us and for the people that's needing it. They don't want to do it. Let's do it ourselves. Put our boats together, get us a team together, and now we got an aquaponics team. They go out there and they secure and they find out where the place is going, and we find out how we can take this water straight out the clouds, straight from these places, and get it to where we need it to go. We don't need nobody help for that. The service that's the second provider itself. Once we come on and bring it together, you know, it's a good thing that we got this in place, but we want to make sure I am prepared for all means necessary. You know, we will get this done. I'm sorry.
No problem. We're kind of losing you, intermittently. But this has been really great. This has been wonderful. Did we address your concerns, Sister Judith?
Yes. But I would like to definitely, you know, work with him to find out, you know, more about this. You know, it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone on here will have an opportunity to reach out. We're working very, very closely together, and and you all are all a part of it as you wish to be, and so we will all connect. You all have my contact, and just you know, reach out to Neighborhood Commerce, and we're all working together. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to have to wrap up. We lost Dr. Ken, and he was here. And it seems like we lost someone else. But we're going to go back around, and don't know how many we still got, but it looks like pretty much almost everybody. So we're going to go back around and ask everyone to just give a, you know, like a one or two sentence thoughts, and certainly we're grateful and thankful to you, Marshawn, for coming back, and I mean, three times, and the energy is just high, just great. I'm totally, completely sold. I love what you're doing, you know, throughout the country. We did not get, well, maybe when you come back for final thoughts, if you can share, you know, what's going on in Newark, New Jersey, if you could kind of close with that, that would be great. So, Sister Judith, Dr. Moncrief, Jared, Dr. Long, you can just kind of give, you know, final thoughts, and then Marshawn, you have the last word. Judith.
Oh, okay. My last word is just three words. Never give up. That is it.
Thank
Never
you.
Give up, because a lot of times I wanted to give up. But with people like Marshawn, you know, building us up, you know, it's just amazing that there's help out there that we can get by just reaching out. So because of you, Dr. Mary Lee, that we have the help that we need to reach out. That's it.
Thank you so very much. Dr. Moncrief.
Yes, tonight was a lot of information, a lot of good information. Thank you for letting me participate. I landed, though, on Dr. Long's question, and maybe I'm looking at it from a micro perspective, but I think of jazz as a language, and a language mm-hmm. that anybody who wants to learn it can study it. I know jazz originated from descendants of enslaved Africans, but it's a language that anybody can embrace. And as I was thinking about, you know, the impact the jazz has on me, I think about myself when I garden every morning, and I don't play the radio. I play music in my head, and some days it's jazz days, but other days I think of a man by the name of, and I don't know what the initials stand for, E.A. Wolf. And E.A. Wolf mm-hmm. was my elementary auditorium teacher, and he was a black man who taught us the classics. He would play classical music for us. No words,
mm-hmm.
music, and we would listen to the music, and he'd teach us who the composers were, and we would learn the names. If it wasn't for him, I would not have any background in the classics. And when I'm out working, I think about the classics. I think about jazz. I think about rap, and I just have the whole morning just on those languages. Those universal languages, because the classics I can actually hear in rap music, in soul music, they're there, mm-hmm. and in jazz. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just want to put that out there, that everything that's ours, jazz, is not necessarily all ours. Some of that I found in the classics too, and the same thing with rap. Thank you.
And thank you so very much. You said that this was an auditorium teacher. Was this teacher in Detroit?
In Detroit Public Schools. He was our teacher in Angel Elementary, Mr. E.A. Wolf. And I wish, I wish
I could, I knew what that stood for, and I tried to find his find him, and I've lost all trace of him. But that man had an impact not only on me, but I bet you on every single student who came to Angel Elementary. Nobody taught that in junior high school or in I went to Northwestern High School, and we were a music school. And I don't remember, maybe somebody did, but we were a music magnet school, learning the classics. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's interesting. Thank you. Yeah, I had an auditorium teacher who I've never forgotten at Rhapsody Bunch, and who had a really strong impact on my life, and it was an inspiration, you know, in many areas. And don't remember his first name, but, you know, like it's Mr. Richard. And I've been looking for Mr. Richard for a long time. just to say thank you. Just to say thank you. That was on the east side at Ralph J. Bunch Elementary. So thank you so very much for this. Ms. Jerry's still here.
Yes, ma'am, I'm still here.
Okay, just for final remarks.
Okay, well, thank you first and foremost, and God bless everybody. Grateful, and this was a very enlightening show. I want to say that first. And I want to talk to, you know, those people out there who may be having it rough right now. There's a lot of rough stuff going on. If you feel like anything that was said here sparked something in you, inspired you in some sort of way, understand that's the Lord telling you your work ain't done yet. And if you can't pick up on the idea that Mr. Marshawn Kinsey is motivated the way that he is and all of us are because we see the potential that we have, even if it's hard for you to see yours right now, take a step back. Get back to that spirit. Get back to who you are despite what everybody else then said to you, and you'll understand again where we're at. That's what you need to bring to the table. Don't worry about bringing anything else. You bring a sovereign spirit to the table, and we're going to move forward. None of this is going to fail. If you can bring that, you just brought it all. That's it. Thank you. Good night.
And thank you so very much. Dr. Long.
Again, Dr. Barry Lee, thanks for the opportunity. You know, what I'd like to do is just ditto what Mr. Jared McCord had said as well, and, you know, give credit to Mr. Kinsey for through these last 3 weeks. It's been an adventure because, I mean, just think about all the things we focused on, and, you know, to listen to Dr. Moncrief give a scenario in terms of how, you know, music, the arts touched her, you know, based on the question that he stimulated. I think that's real powerful in terms of this message. And, you know, again, I love jazz. I just love everything about it. And it just so happened, you know, this is the Labor Day weekend, and, you know, we celebrate that art. And so with the show being as it is, how it's so informative, it just stimulated that sort of question that I had. And, again, so thanks for the opportunity. Again, all the best to Mr. Kinsey and what you're doing. Stay motivated, and you are definitely a motivator. You know, your energy, you can just – it exudes from the radio, and this has been a great 3 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Long. And I'd like to say that at the beginning of the show, when Marshawn, when you were speaking about the Dr. Mary Lee TV show, it was just like, you know, it's like a confirmation that we've been working on TV, you know, and it is coming very soon for us. We have a vision. We started working with know some professionals in that area. Definitely going to keep this black. And we're also working on a we're going to continue this show for sure, and so we are developing a black platform. We've got so much talent, so you know soon we will have our own black free airwaves, and you know where we can speak and do how talk on our topics without any censoring and be free. So we're looking so much, you know, forward to the that coming very, very soon. And so I want to say thank you. It's just, you know, I know you're a godsend into my life and all of our listeners and everyone who's a part of Neighborhood Commerce Institute. You're certainly a blessing. The word of God being fulfilled in our lives. I want you to know how much I appreciate you and, you know, where we're going. You know, only God knows, but thank you for being who you are. Mr. Marshawn Kinsley, the floor is yours.
Again, I'm just very thankful again for, you know, the open ears and the invitation to be here again. You know, we're working very hard to ensure we have a strong stability. You know, I hope, you know, people can understand that what we're trying to do is build up, you know, our people and our nation. And some of the things may be a little offensive or may hurt in a sense, but I think that, you know, I think they have to understand there's a time when somebody may go off or go crazy or go what's name. And I think that's when it comes to their kids being affected. When our kids are starving and our kids don't have a future, I don't think there's no better time for us to grind and do what we need to do, you know. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they were saying, well, you know, sometimes you sound like a tyrant. Would you want to do the part? And I try to explain to them, you know, if you look at the code of God, says Jesus was a tyrant to Lucifer. Lucifer called him a tyrant. He was out there taking his demons out of people, healing the people he got sick, bringing them back alive after he killed them. He was a tyrant to him. And so he used the same mindset, you know what I'm saying, to use the same mindset to say, I want to be able to do good. I want my kids to be able to eat. I want my kids to stop shooting each other, and I want them to be out there, you know, entrepreneurship, owning their own business, trading stocks and investment, going to Africa, finding a creative mineral, and then they can take this mineral and bring it back and get people to utilize it and get fun behind it and turn this into a billion-dollar industry. This is the stuff that my people have and that we're working on, that we're ready to teach them, and I'm just so happy that we have instruments like us on the table that we could utilize, so when we do this animation, we can put our jazz in the animation, and so that this way when we have our jazz artists out there and we're creating them, now they have a way to continue to make money. They have a way to get out there, because the culture part is not that music, it's just that when it's time for us to get exposed, nobody wants to have us opportunity to get exposed when they person doing jazz. So of course they won't let their person come to the store forefront. So we just need to create that media outlet and those outlets where we control who comes to the forefront. And it's nothing personal, but we can't keep doing like they always do. You know, every time we get an award show, we always let the white person, one white person, Justin Bieber, come on in here and get this award to show our thing. We always do that. And then, you know, again, when it comes to the Grammys and stuff, you know, man, maybe acting like we don't even exist. So I just want to let them understand that it's a new black man coming to the forefront. It's too late to prepare for him because he's already here. With all due respect.
God bless you. Thank you. I appreciate you. Love you. And I want to thank our listening audience. And if it weren't for you, Dr. Mary Lee would not be here. So thank you all so very much, our co-host, and our behind-the-scenes, our tech people, everyone who helps. We love you. And until next week, stay safe. God bless you all. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement.
Came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no problem.
promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slam.